October 25th, 2015, we find our heroines convening with a common purpose in mind, freedom for women of color. Freedom to earn, freedom to learn, to teach, to fight, to love, to be sexy. Freedom to be who and where we want to be. Freedom to shake our bodies innately in righteous rhythm as we say we have always been here. So go to www.womensfreedomconference.com and learn how you can assemble in support of the amplification of the voices of women of color. The 2015 Women's Freedom Conference. Bear witness to the evolution.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim DLGG. Tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody? Let's go Mets!
His New York Mets are in an elimination game against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Right, as we speak. Forgive me for diverting attention every once and again.
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Yay!
What's up, everybody? Another video game podcast, but I'm just going to say, if you like G1 Transformers, you might want to check out Transformers Devastation. It's pretty decent.
Ooh.
And let me tell you about Fulton Inc. Bears, but that's a whole other podcast somewhere.
And joining us later tonight will be at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter. Go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Oh, I totally clapped over you.
And make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
There you go.
Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus, search for the Declick Nation page, or just go to google.com/+ Declick Nation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and youtube.com/Declick Nation. Use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites to join the conversation. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Go to their website, cspn.us. And we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you ever have any feedback you want to send to the show, you can send that to comicbookchronicles@gmail.com. So last week was New York Comic Con 2015. And that applause is from Agent 70, who was there on hand.
Yes, yes, it was a great, great show.
We're going to get his recap here right now, actually, before we even get to the news. He's got cool things to show us and yes. Hopefully some stories.
Most of this is going to be swag. Look forward to, you know, if I can make carve out some time to put together a brief picture, a brief gallery and a small article for the Click Nation website. Look for that within the next week or so. Basically, I had a great time. I was only able to go 3 out of the 4 days. Work kind of kept me, as we were talking about last week on the show, work kept me from going on Thursday. And Friday, I had something to file. So Friday evening was pretty much the first time I got there. But I was able to knock out a bunch of books that I needed to get signed Friday night, which was awesome. The person who I saw Friday night was the inimitable, often imitated, but inimitable, Art Adams. And I got stacks of stuff signed by Art Adams. I got the Fantastic Four issues with the new Fantastic Four. But one of the things that Art Adams sold me, which got so much talk from, so many looks and comments from other comic book professionals, was that I didn't see this Friday night. I got my signatures from him Friday night, but Saturday morning I stopped by his booth early in Artist Alley, and what he sold me was a print, this gigantic print $20.
Who sold you that?
Arthur Adams, the guy who's doing the variant covers for Marvel, old school Marvel artist.
Yeah.
So is this a comic? It's a cover, I think, to an anniversary edition.
Now, see, like now a, I'm mad I didn't go by his when he was here at Heroes.
Right, let me see if I can shine the light up on this a little bit. So you can see that, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I'm sorry, this is going to be a pretty big bummer for the people on the audio only.
Well, that's why you should go to theclicknation.com or youtube.com/theclicknation and you can watch.
Exactly. So here's another print, new stuff.
Okay, I've seen that picture.
Yes, yeah. this is recent stuff. This is another awesome thing that Arthur Adams sold me. So I connected with Sanford Green, former guest of the podcast and newly minted artist on Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yes.
And I bought from Sanford his art book, Deadlines, Volume 4.
Nice.
Oh.
This is really nice. This is the slipcover edition.
Did that just come out?
He tweeted a picture of it last week I saw from New York. I don't know if it just came out or if he was just...
Because I remember it's fairly recent
because I remember when we were when I was doing some research on him before the show. I think this was either in the soon, you know, like coming out soon or had just released on his website in terms of like the date.
Gotcha.
But you know, I picked this up from Sanford. He was awesome, and he did a quick sketch of Iron Fist in the back.
Nice.
You know, a quickie profile.
Nice.
I did a lot of getting signatures. That was one of my big missions on at this con because there's a couple of creators, Arthur Adams being one of them, who I don't get to see at these New York Comic Cons that often. They don't really show up that often. One creator that I made a point of seeing was Tim Sale. I got him to sign a bunch of things. A lot of these artists weren't doing sketches. And if they were, they were doing them for a heck of a lot of money. But Tim Sale was not doing any sketches, but I did get him to sign some Captain America White and Spider-Man Blue. You can see his signature here. I ran into the Paybacks guys. Guests on the show, Donny Cates, Elliot Ray Hall, and I got the autograph of the artist, Jeff Shaw. They send their regards. They say, what's up? They signed my copy of Paybacks.
Nice.
And congratulations to Donny on his newfound friendship with
Rob Liefeld.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He got him blocked.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with Frank Barbieri, the writer of Broken World. Got him to sign my copy of Broken World. Said what's up to him. You know, found out, you know, like when I described to him how I knew him, he laughed because of he remembered that time that he was locked out of his apartment doing a podcast.
Yeah. So he doesn't remember us, but I'm sure he remembers sitting outside recording a podcast.
No, he remembered us. Trust me, he remembered us. So remember I was saying earlier about artists who don't appear at cons that often. John Cassidy was at this con, so I got him to sign a couple of important things. One was Astonishing X-Men number 1. Another was Star Wars number 1.
Ah.
Let's see here. Won't run through everything, but some of the coolest things I got signed were the most recent hip-hop covers. I got Juan Doe to sign the Doctor Strange homage to The Chronic.
Yes.
Wando's very, very cool. And you won't believe who was so super cool, so awesome. And we don't realize how much we appreciate his work because Weird World wasn't for everybody. But Mike Del Mundo, Filipino brother from Canada, lives in Toronto.
Oh, I know signed, he's Filipino.
Yeah, signed a bunch of stuff for me. He signed a couple of issues of Weird World. And
did you already have those issues, or did you buy them there?
No, I had them. I brought them.
Oh, okay. I guess that's no good reason to start buying physical books.
Well, I mean, you can always buy it from them, and then they'll sign it, and then, you know, it's sort of like a win-win.
Yeah.
But I also got him to sign my copy of Amazing Spider-Man number 1, the hip-hop cover. And I would have loved to try to catch Dan Slott, but he only had a signing, I think, Friday morning, and I wasn't there. So okay. He was at the Marvel booth, I think. But anyway, so that's, you know, in terms of the signings, the two big gets for me were Cassidy and Art Adams, because they don't come around that often. I did run into Mitch Gerard, who did The Punisher. Got him to do, got him to sign my copy of Punisher number 1.
Cool.
Yeah, no, he is very cool. Very, very cool.
Met him at Heroes Con 2 years ago.
Definitely. You know who I also met was Phil Noto. And if I could just grab my sketchbook, you know, I've got like a whole host of things in my office here that are con related that I wanted to share really quickly. Phil Noto and Mitch Gerards are pretty much the only ones I really had time to ask for like a quickie sketch, because there were lines pretty much around everybody else. Mm-hmm. And they were real nice and did some quickie sketches for me. And when you see this, you'll see why I appreciate it so much. So I'll show you the Gerards one first, because he's not that big like a sketcher at a con. And it's a simple sketch, but I said, look, I love the Punisher mask. So he did the mask. Real simple. Right? Free sketch. Nothing. No big deal. Yeah. But when you see the next one, you'll be amazed at how even the simplest pencil drawing reflects the style of the artist. Phil Noto did a quickie side profile of the Black Widow, and look at that.
Yeah, you get that at Phil Noto.
Exactly. Absolutely. You can absolutely tell that's Phil Noto.
In fact, we will be getting into a book he did this week later.
So, you know, I find that remarkable.
He did a book this week?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, he did. I haven't read it yet.
You know, I find that absolutely remarkable that you can tell right away that, you know, that he did that quickie pencil sketch. You know, quickest thing. So I'm going to go through this kind of rapid fire, because I don't want to spend all night looking at my cool stuff. Jim Chung was at the show. I'm a big fan of Jim Chung. I've been showing off his stuff all the time. Yeah. He also had a print of his hip-hop cover that has not yet been released.
Oh. Nice. Oh, man.
The Illadelph cover. Yeah. So he signed this. It's a kind of like a weird size print. You see how it's like square?
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of fun to look for a frame for this. We'll see. Another hip-hop print. Remember I said Juan Doe was there signing my Doctor Strange? He had a print of the Howard the Duck, the old dirty bastard.
Yeah, I kind of want that one too.
Who did that?
Juan Doe.
Juan Doe. Okay, yeah.
So, you know, that's some awesome stuff. Again, Jim Chung, I picked up this this print. It's like a glossy print of Captain America. I
from
picked
Infinity,
up
Infinity, right?
I believe so. No. It's just a cover. It's an alternate cover. It's a variant cover for a Cap. I picked up the cover for A-Force number 1 from Jim Chung. Look at all these prints, man. I'm going to be rotating, you know, like what's hanging on the walls.
Yeah, but say you need some stock and some frames.
Yep. Phil Noto, Deadpool.
I got that one. Yeah.
This is pretty, pretty awesome. This is a great print, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some baseball ones related. You know, Brian Kong, he's a sports artist. Kind of did like a cool thing for Noah Syndergaard, whose nickname is Thor. You know, kind of did that as an homage to Walt Simonson. But let me tell you, my two of my biggest gets at this con, I was talking about Mike Del Mundo before. Look at this variant cover, this print of Groot.
Del Mundo's one of the cover champions.
Yeah. This is probably like one of the top priorities to frame, because like everyone stopped me to look at two prints that I had that were kind of like showing out of the plastic top loader I was carrying. Mm-hmm. One was the big Art Adams poster print, and the other one was this. Like people stopped and stared at this one and said, where can I buy that?
Oh, he's busting out the pot.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is a really great print. And last but not least, at Matt Wang 97 was hanging out with me at the con for a couple of days.
Who's been tweeting just now, so shout out to him.
So he's probably waiting for me to show this. This is a print he picked up for me as a kid.
Kari Randolph.
Yes, Kari Randolph.
I've got that hanging on my wall right here.
Yeah,
no kidding.
That's him. That's when I met Tim. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Look at that.
I just put it up this weekend, actually, so good time. Yeah. You know, I've had it for 2 years.
That's awesome.
That print is great. I love that one.
So this is a great print. Great, great stuff. Great, great stuff. So that's it for my for the prints that I picked up this year. I also picked up, speaking of Power Man and Iron Fist, I picked these up loose, Marvel Legends, like the older Marvel Legends, Power Man and Iron Fist, just because.
That's nice, yeah.
Just for fun. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I picked up. If it hits me, you know, if it occurs to me, I'll bring it up, but that's pretty much it. It was like a big print. I kind of went nuts on the prints because I wanted to add to what I was hanging. I have a room that I wanted to kind of decorate with more prints. So I'll be going over to Michael's or hitting up some online cheap frame places to get some of the stuff framed.
Hmm.
You know. But yeah, lots of fun. I had a great time. I connected with a lot of creators. They're all really receptive to coming on the Comic Chronicles. I'm not going to go through all the names, but I have to do my part and help out Tim Dog and reach out to some of these creators who met me but haven't met Tim yet. So, you know, it'll help if I mention, oh, by the way, you know, we spoke at New York Comic Con and, you know, about coming on the show, blah, blah, blah. So
holding it down for us up in New York City.
Absolutely. We got to. We hold it down. And what's funny is that, some of them asked me, like, oh, where are the other guys from Comic Book Chronicles? Are they here? I think you guys said that before. Like, mm-hmm. oh, are the other guys here? Like, when you guys met up at HeroesCon. And, and I was like, nah, you know, it's expensive to get everybody together in one place.
One day.
You know? One dude's coming from Chicago, you know, from Illinois, another one's from South Carolina, another one's from Georgia. I'm the one holding it down in New York, so.
We just need a East Coast person, or what not East Coast, West Coast
West
person.
West Coast, yeah, West no, we Coast. Need a West Coast person. We need a West Coast person and a Texas person, because I know that they have cons in there too, like or at least something in the Midwest.
Yeah, there's a couple, yeah.
Yep. So that's my quickie recap of New York Comic Con. I don't want to dwell too much on what happened, because we're going to go through a lot of that stuff in the news. But I just wanted to say, thanks to at MattWang97 for coming through. I had some friends, believe it or not, I had some friends from my other life, my real life, not the Agent_70 life, who came through and kind of experienced the con from my perspective, which is the not the show floor, but Artist Alley. And it was their first time going through Artist Alley, and they were amazed. They were like, it's another show altogether. Coming at it from that perspective.
Yeah. I had a Facebook friend, him and his wife went, and I guess they've been going every year. Well, not every year, but every year since I've known them, which is like 3 years going on now. And I was coming so jealous. Well, he has some nice pictures up on his Facebook.
Nice.
Cool. And we have PCN_Dirt here with us.
Yay!
You got your lower third working. Why am I the only one not working now?
You want to know the secret to getting my lower third working?
What was it?
I'm using Internet Explorer.
Huh.
I know, it's weird.
That's weird?
Yeah.
You fancy Windows 10. What, were you using Edge or whatever it's called before?
It won't load in Edge. Well, Hangouts won't load in Edge.
Right.
The lower third won't load in Chrome. But
which is so crazy. I'm using Chrome right now. Granted, it's on a MacBook, but still.
Yeah,
I'm using Chrome and Max coming up.
Yeah, it worked fine for a long time, and then it didn't, then it did, and then it didn't. And so I just thought, well, you know what? I've got an Internet Explorer on here. I never use it, but might as well see what happens. And amazingly enough, it all works.
Funny.
Okay.
Nice.
Funny. Oh, I actually forgot to mention the last bit of swag I picked up from New York Comic Con was this shield hat, my uniform hat.
Nice.
Cool. Yep. So that's the New York Comic Con recap.
There you go. And look out for more coming up soon, hopefully on theclicknation.com. And, it'll leak out probably to cultsofthepodcast.com or cspn.us. So, look out for that. We'll have pictures and quick stories from me from the con floor.
All right. Let's get to some cinematic news from the week. So this will be New York Comic Con heavy, of course.
Of course.
Marvel Animation announced a holiday film, and Guardians of the Galaxy was renewed for a second season. So
you mean the cartoon?
The cartoon. Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, what?
let's see.
Someone's got a little brown paper bag full of comics there.
Yep. Gotta take them out. Gotta get ready.
So the animated holiday film will pit heroes such as Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, Captain Marvel, and the one and only Santa Claus versus Loki and Ymir.
Ymir, yeah, I guess.
Ymir. Yeah, Ymir.
It will air on Disney XD in 2016, so it's next holiday season, huh?
Mm.
Yeah, because that makes sense, because they haven't even introduced Captain Marvel in Avengers yet, or Avengers Assemble.
They haven't yet?
Okay. No, they're going to do her and Miss Marvel and Inhumans and Black Panther all next season, I believe.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because they were trying to make it a big thing.
Yeah. The last episode, they sort of teased, like, the Avengers world, and it ended with him, Tony and Cap looking at the globe of the Earth, and then a bunch of little, things popped up at different locations showing heroes. I couldn't make – it was small on my TV because I was too far away, so I couldn't make out who the people were, but I saw people screaming online about, oh, my God, Captain Marvel, oh, my God, Black Panther. let's see. Get some good stuff. Mark Hamill returning in Flash Season 2 as the Trickster. Paul Reubens to play Penguin's father on Gotham.
It's the second time at it. Second go of it.
Benicio Del Toro will return as Collector in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Bryan Cranston wants to play a Marvel villain, Mr. Sinister.
Sure.
Okay.
X-Men Apocalypse wraps up the X-Men's movie saga. Okay. So it's going to happen afterwards.
TV. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. basically an expansion on previous comments you made about the Apocalypse tying off the second X-Men trilogy started by First Class. Usually they're about 2 hours, but might let this one be longer. There's even an homage at the end. It's going to be spoiled because they decided to use it in the trailer, which comes out in like 6 months, but it's kind of a wrap-up of the six movies. Heavy Metal's Interceptor heads to film, and that's a post-apocalyptic vampire comic series by Donnie Cates, friend of the podcast.
There you go.
And Dylan Burnett.
Who's not a friend of the podcast.
Rumored of Michael B. Jordan playing Boba Fett in a delayed spin-off movie for Star Wars.
Okay.
two more characters revealed in Star Wars The Force Awakens. Someone called the Crimson Corsair.
Bateen or something? What was it? Bazeen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thor 3 details. Hulk, Valkyrie, and a story that's too dark. Marvel Studios may have found its Thor Ragnarok Helmer and actor, director, Taika
Waititi. Oh my goodness.
So when this was originally posted, it was rumored that the Hulk would be returning in Phase 3 for Thor Ragnarok, and before we started recording, Deadline and other sources are confirming that Mark Ruffalo has signed on for Thor Ragnarok.
Right, and apparently they may introduce Valkyrie in here.
I was about to say, speaking of Mark Ruffalo, he tweeted out that he had attended New York Comic Con in disguise with his son.
Yeah, I had that down there later. Him and Jared Leto also was in disguise.
And allegedly so were Robin Lopez and Brooke Lopez, but it's kind of hard to disguise themselves as 7-foot-tall dudes. I didn't see him.
You see a couple of Chewbacca's walking around, you know.
Right. Anyway.
Vin Diesel adds fuel to Inhumans casting rumors. Those rumors being him playing Black Bolt. Carrie Ann Moss's Jessica Jones role revealed. She's playing gender swap version of Jaren Hogarth, a longtime ally of Danny Rand, a.k.a. Iron Fist.
Yeah, she looks good, and you know, she looks good in person, too. I caught the tail end of a quickie panel that the cast of Jessica Jones did at the Marvel booth, and she looks good, and you know, like she looks good right now, considering that The Matrix was how many years ago?
Yeah. Did you see the episode that they showed, or was that not the same panel?
No, not the same panel. That was in one of the exclusive panel rooms. This was at the Marvel booth, you know, like on the show floor. Oh,
gotcha.
Proper.
Gotcha.
Seth Rogen is shopping Garth Ennis's The Boys as a TV series. Ronda Rousey hopes to be seriously considered for Captain Marvel.
Stop. We need an actress. Just stop.
Well, she goes on to say in here she's getting acting parts and she's really trying to push for, well, not push for, but she really hopes to be considered with what acting gig she is starting to get. So.
I mean, listen, I give her credit for wanting to improve so that she can be considered seriously. So
you won't see a movie with The Rock in it? Is that what you're saying?
I beg your pardon?
You won't see a movie with The Rock in it?
Well, see, here's the thing. The Rock has gotten that many more movies under his belt. And he was already an actor in his regular job as a WWE superstar.
Well, yeah, but I mean, point technically, taken. They cut the same promos in UFC.
Do they?
Basically.
Does Rousey do that?
Oh, everybody does. Have you ever seen a UFC press conference? Like the weigh-in beforehand? Oh, it's all wrestling promos.
Really?
I mean, that's really what it is, yeah.
That's funny.
Arrow's Damian Dark will cross over with Legends of Tomorrow and The Flash. Supergirl, Transporter TV series star Chris Vance to play...
None? No.
Okay. Lionsgate teams with Double Take Comics for a film adaptation of Z-Men.
Weird.
Never heard of them.
Double Take is the company that's doing all the Night of the Living Dead comics. Mm. We talked about them a couple weeks ago that all their number one issues are motion comics on their website that have been out for 2 years, but they finally put them in print a couple weeks ago.
Moon Knight reportedly being developed for Netflix. Two X-Men TV shows in development, Legion at FX and Hellfire at Fox. So it's got the internet's buzzing yesterday.
Yeah, those are both bizarre choices.
What's that?
Legion and Hellfire.
Oh. Yeah.
Hellfire is set in the 60s with the Hellfire Club.
So Mad Men with mutants?
Yeah, and Legion is based on Xavier's son, the guy with the bad haircut that had the ill-fated series a couple years ago.
Right.
I mean, they're out-of-the-box properties to choose, but
yeah.
I don't see why they couldn't work. Hopefully they won't be in the vein of, like, Gotham, where they just take the name only and kind of just do their own thing. The thing about any X-Men spin-off TV show is the possibilities of various cameos, because there's so many mutants that can be used. So this since Marvel was working with Fox for these TV shows, people started speculating that maybe there was some kind of trade and Marvel would get Fantastic Four rights back, but...
Yeah, not so much.
Yep, damn! Not so much. That's such a downer. It's such a downer to see that this is officially denied.
Then, as some people said, Sony came out and said the same thing before the Spider-Man rights were negotiated in a dual
official
ownership.
Right.
So, I think that's one to keep an eye on.
All right.
And another surprise, because I thought this person said that none of his properties would ever be used in, I guess, movies or TV. Maybe it was just movies. But let's see, rumor that FX is to produce Brian K. Vaughan's Why the Last Man for TV.
Which I think they've been trying to do that for a while now. It just hasn't, there's been various states of happening, not happening.
Because before he always said he didn't want his, maybe that, I'm thinking about Robert Kirkman, never mind.
Yeah.
But then he's got Walking Dead. Was it Kirkman always said he didn't want Invincible to turn into anything? One of those two said something.
That sounds like something he would say, but...
Anyways, Creed director Ryan Coogler may direct Black Panther. PlayStation's Power seeking extras for Power Girl's funeral.
Where are they filming?
In Atlanta.
How far away are you?
A little over an hour.
There you go.
Hey, thank you for expanding that, Roddy. I'm probably too late now, but...
No, because it's going to be Monday.
This Monday?
Yeah.
I could take off work. Yeah, <I'm out. laughs> After the show, I need to ask you something else semi-related to this dirt. Let's see.
Marvel Comics. I don't know anybody making it, so I can't help
it. Yeah, we'll talk after the show. I've talked to Roddy about it. Marvel Comics presents Spider-Women. This is a crossover event.
Hang on. Don't that's for later. That one, that shouldn't be there.
Oh, yes, in comics news.
Never mind.
No problem. Wonder Woman's nuke. Oh, never mind. That's comics too.
Damn it. What did...
I didn't do it.
Is. No, I did it. That was totally me. The next one is, however, yeah, you did a Hack Slash one.
Yeah.
I mean, not the Powers Booth one. Excuse me.
Powers Booth joins Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Sin City and Deadwood actor. Has a recurring role on ABC. I didn't know who he was by his name, but when I saw his picture, I was like, oh, that guy that's been on stuff. Looks very familiar.
Yeah, I was trying to think about an older one that he's done, but he's been around here and there.
And horror-centric comic series Hack Slash is coming to television. The series was originally going to be adapted to film, but now, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Reality Relativity Television is producing a TV show instead, with Swordfish and Hitman writer Skip Woods penning the script. Hitman's Adrian Asghari and Ray Ricord are set to executive produce alongside Woods, with Daniel Alter and Jeffrey Yim signed on as co-exec producers. And I'm trying to get I forgot to get my ads up to read. I gotta read two of those a show. While I wait for that to come up, get down to the comic book news. Well, actually, solicits. I guess there were a couple changes for a few DC Comics solicitations in the last couple weeks. Oh, you're taking so slow to open. Let's see. In comic news, Optimus Prime to annex Earth in Transformers 50, number 50 event. What does annex mean?
Annex, just, you know,
bring it in.
Exactly.
Co-op in it.
What?
Taking it over.
Yeah, you picked the word I was going to use.
It's co-op. It's what we should do with Canada. You just roll some tanks up there and say, this is us now.
This is ours.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not even laughing at that.
The invasion of Canada gets applause.
USA. USA. I mean, there is a book that is out. That is
Oh, yeah. Exactly. We stand on guard.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Today's podcast is sponsored by My Comic Shop. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, finished classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother slipping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today. Oops. What happened? That's good. Okay. IDW announces Dark Jim series for Jim and the Holograms.
Less truly outrageous, I guess.
Well, it's more outrageous.
Right.
Even truer outrageous.
All new outrageous.
All new.
That's right. Oh, no.
Legend of Korra comic announces artists and debuts some art at New York Comic Con. Dark Horse announced plans to continue the story of Legend of Korra in an all-new comic series helmed by co-creator Michael Dante DiMartino. Yada. Frank Miller announces new Sin City series at New York Comic Con.
And what was the sound effect to that?
Oh.
No, I'll read it. I'll be the one.
Gotta spread the love. Marvel announced Avengers Standoff crossover event to celebrate Captain America's 75th anniversary. So instead of a universe-wide event series. This is sticking to the main Avengers titles and a couple extras. All new, all different Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, New Avengers, The Ultimates, and Sam Wilson, Captain America, and perhaps some more will be involved.
Just like they used to do.
Yep. They realized that they haven't had a Avengers-centric event in probably a decade or so, because they all end up being turned into universe.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. They just end up expanding to include everybody.
Yeah. I don't know. Infinity probably seemed Affinity and...
Okay, yeah, I guess that was kind of a...
Avengers focus. And I think the one before that might have been. I can't remember.
Because they always...
Avengers X-Men, but that's, you know...
Well, didn't Infinity also draw in the Guardians?
For an issue.
To a point, yeah.
I think like two issues, which didn't make sense to me, because they're supposed to be the protectors of the Earth in space. Yet they didn't do jack squat when the builders came to invade. They got involved with the S.W.O.R.D. up in space?
Yeah, they were pretty much hovering around space, and I think they kind of came down and said, hey, look, y'all are in some real trouble, and then rolled out.
I still say that made no sense. Avengers are off doing what the Guardians are supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. That bugged me. Let's see. Dark Horse brings James Cameron's Avatar to comics with a 10-year deal. Valiant debuts new Shadow Man design in Ninja at number 10. Greg Capullo to take a break from Batman for a project with Mark Millar after issue 51, because I think his contract ends on 50, maybe 51, I guess. So sounds like he's going to do his thing with Mark Millar and then come back. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually probably doesn't come back. That could be like a good exit strategy.
Mm-hmm. According to Snyder, he's poised to come back, so I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah.
The Warriors cult classic gets digital motion graphic novel reboot.
Can you dig it?
I have no idea what that means.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no.
Hey, that movie's older than he is. Give him some slack on that one.
Yes, we know.
Isn't that what Macho Man used to say?
And snap into a Slim Jim.
Well, actually, no. Booker T says it. Can you dig it, sucker?
That's because he's adapting that.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's funny.
Marvel pairs Obi-Wan and Anakin for a Star Wars series with Charles Soule and Marco Cicchetto.
I gong that because I don't want to see any of this prequel nonsense, and now it's coming.
But this is going to be good prequel stuff.
Man. Exactly.
Just like the Clone Wars was good prequel.
Exactly.
Good prequel.
And it's Charles Soule. Come on, man.
I know. I got love for Charles Soule, fellow barrister, fellow attorney, but still, yeah, fellow New Yorker.
And it's only limited series. So
just wait until Greg Pak's 12-issue Jar Jar series comes out.
Oh no! Not Greg Pak. Come on, man. When we get Greg Pak on the show, because he definitely was receptive to coming on, we're going to ask him point blank, are you doing a Jar Jar miniseries?
Then he'll just disconnect the call. Yeah,
exactly. He'd be like, oh, what do these guys think of me?
Hey, as long as he doesn't get a panicked look on his face and go, I can't confirm or deny anything,
yeah.
Right, then you know we're in trouble.
All right. So back to Kingsway West.
Let's see. Now, so get ready for Marvel's Spider-Woman crossover event. In the spring, Spider-Gwen, Silk, and Spider-Woman will be crossing over as Spider-Woman and Silk go over to Spider-Gwen's universe, and hijinks ensue.
Oh, those hijinks.
Hijinks.
Dark Horse. One thing I did take away from this is, by the time this event starts, Jessica Drew will already have had her baby, because she leaves it at home with the porcupine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's.
I can't.
That's a thing.
I can't. That's.
And then the Spider-Gwen universe versions of Spider-Woman and Silk will cross over when they're in her dimension. So I'm sure they'll hop over and they'll have bad guy goatees and whatnot. Dark Horse announces Bird Boy and Action Cat at All Ages panel. John Muir Jr. to illustrate Dark Knight Returns prequel one shot. Lone Wolf 2100 returns for a monthly series from screenwriter Eric Heiserer and artist Miguel Sepulveda. Sepulveda.
Are you sure?
Wolf 2100, a re-imaging of Kazuo Koki's classic manga Lone Wolf and Cub, set in the not-too-distant future, AD 2100.
I'm sorry, who originally developed that?
Kazuo Koiki.
Kazuo Koki.
That's fine.
Koiki.
That's fine.
Tom Taylor and Robson Rocca team up for Batman Superman arc, taking over from our friend Greg Pak. I wonder if Greg Pak will actually be returning on this book or not.
Just yeah, I mean, he's got Totally Awesome Hulk to do, so you know, he's
going to have and his
exactly. Stuff, yeah. He's got the Superman, the Hulk, and his own stuff.
The Gotham Academy yearbook, I guess one shot or whatever that's going to be, is going to have a whole bunch of guest artists. Little Gotham's Dustin Gwynn, Mouse Guard's David Peterson, and
Time
cartoonist Hope Larson.
Oh, I totally forgot to show you guys something I got from David Peterson. This was like the source of my my exercise for the Comic Con on Saturday night. This behemoth
wow.
art book, The Art of Mouse Guard, 2005 to 2015, David Peterson. Some beautiful stuff in here. This thing weighs a ton. Dirt, I don't know if anyone has ordered this for your store, but when you see it, you'll understand why what I'm talking about when I say this thing weighs a ton. Trying to fit this in a book bag is insane.
Is that a $49.95?
$59.99.
Oof. Nope.
But Mouse Guard is awesome. Totally worth it. Have I flipped through the whole thing? No.
Let's see. The yearbook story will feature short solo tales about the supporting cast of Gotham Academy, and before that, the series will tie into Robin War. Patsy Walker, the first all-female creator comic from Marvel, which people came out after the fact to say that wasn't true.
Yeah, I was wondering about it when I saw that. So, or if even in the comments, they were like, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I forget which one. X-23, Marjorie Liu's series, I think, had an all-female creative team.
Mm.
Yeah, because I saw she tweeted about it. Tom Taylor and Ethan Van Sciver's Green Lantern, The Edge of Oblivion, to follow up on Green Lantern Lost Army. So in this, the Guardians are trapped in the universe before ours, the universe that, I guess, exploded or whatever to create our universe. So they have to try to escape before it explodes. We'll probably end up changing the past or whatever they do.
Wait, you said the Guardians?
Green Lanterns. One of the space teams.
That's about to say, that's a crossover for you.
Faith Aaron Hicks pins all new Buffy tale for young readers over at Dark Horse. Jared Leto and Mark Ruffalo crashed the New York Comic Con show in disguise. These stories don't faze me anymore because every year someone does it. So I'm just like, eh. Star Wars Shattered Empire number one was the best-selling comic of September 2015. Or actually, that's not the full series name because was it Star Wars?
Journey to
Star Wars.
I was going to put it for later.
Shattered Empire number one. Estimated at 208,000 units sold. Whoa. So Star Wars is basically doing everything for Marvel right now.
Yeah, actually, I was looking through our numbers, our subscriber numbers the other day, and the top five books, Secret Wars is number four, and all the rest are Star Wars titles.
Mm. That people have on their pull list?
Yep.
That makes sense because...
Check it out. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I was going to say is some of the Star Wars books, at least Darth Vader and the main Star Wars book, have staying power now because they've established themselves as being pretty consistent products.
And there are people that are just, you know, whatever that third series is, they just want to get it to whatever character it is. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. I asked my comic book, when I was talking to my comic shop owner, he was telling me that Secret Wars number one was the highest selling book for his store ever. Does your store hold a record like that?
Well, our highest ordered book is actually coming in next week. That's our custom Back to the Future cover.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting 500 copies of that coming in.
Wow.
Next week. Mm-hmm. But again,
we talked about this, that you're going to keep it like by the...
Yeah, that's a perennial seller. We figure it's one of those things that, you know, the type of people that come in our store buying toys and movies and video games and...
Who's making that?
IDW.
Oh, okay.
But our cover is actually cover X. That's how many variant covers. I think there's like 30-some variant covers to that book. So ours is X. That's how far down on the list we are by the time we got the order in and finalized and everything. And then there's, you know, another 10 or so after us. So there are a lot of covers to Back to the Future number one.
Spider-Man to make his Disneyland debut in November. Aftershock Comics reveals details on Brian Azzarello's upcoming American Monster. Supernatural crime thriller Cork Town is coming to Alterna Comics spring 2016. There was a story on CNET.com of a someone making Thor's remaking Thor's hammer, and he got it to where only his fingerprint would lift it, but the hammer had to be laid on a metal surface because it would be, I guess, magnetized to the metal. Right. Until his fingerprint was on it. That was kind of cool.
Pretty, yeah, it was.
Actually, someone was tweeting at the comic book or the CB Chron account today about it. Sports Set Sneaks. Follow that Twitter account. Sports Set Sneaks.
Okay.
Sneakers or sneaks.
Listen, we get all kinds, right? We welcome all kinds tweeting at us. That's fine. Yeah.
And he also sent a picture at his comic book store setup. I had some table set up with variant covers and whatnot.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
We enjoyed the feedback and the interaction.
Hey, that was the image I meant to ask you about beforehand that you had gotten, that you tweeted back out about clicks.
Oh, yeah, the clicks of the week?
Yeah.
Yes, some guy that followed me, I was doing my clicks of the week yesterday, and someone tweeted me the Wolfpack symbol. Where is it?
It's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, it says click week, and it's got the Wolfpack wrestling symbol on it.
That is an old fan of the Click Nation. That is someone very familiar with the Click Nation.
That is at the other Mario C, the letter C. He's a comedy writer and creator of comic books such as Ashes, Corktown, and Epilogue. Hey.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, Corktown creator. So we appreciate the feedback and interaction. We talked about Spider-Woman. Wonder Woman's new comic will explore her Amazonian origins, and this is a digital series. The Legends of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz and Ray Dillon will follow Diana's beginnings as Wonder Woman, predominantly focused on her life as a young woman growing up on the Amazon's home island, Themyscira, cut off from the outside world. All right. And last ad read for tonight is Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Charging, Using Blank as Power for Good, Street Fighter 2, Jarvis is My Co-Pilot, Avengers Age of Ultron, Nelson and Murdoch, Avocados at Law, Daredevil, A Tragic Tragic Comic Heroes Ending, Aquaman in a Sardine Can, Aquaman, Central City Running Club, The Flash, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Hey, before we get into books, I wanted to bring up something real quick. We were talking about art books earlier, and I think before the show, Age of 70 had mentioned an art book by Sanford Green
right. That
he had picked up. And I forgot to mention that there's an art book coming out next week that's coming out next week from Darwin Cook. If it's not already out, it might be coming up in some of those. Which, by the way, that Sanford Green was a Kickstarter. I did not realize that. So from like last year, and so I just found a link to where I could find that one. But anyway, so I have up Graphic Inc. the DC Comics art of Darwin Cook, which looks to be coming out next week.
Cool.
And I just wanted to put that out there for anybody who was a fan of Darwin Cook's art.
I actually had one last print that I hadn't pulled out of the top loader. This is from Rage of Ultron by Jerome Opeña.
Ooh.
So
let me some Jerome Opeña art.
Yeah, I think that's it. I was just looking through the what's stashed in the top loader. I think I went through every print I got now. I think so. Dirt, you missed it though. There's some cool stuff in here, man.
Muted.
Dirt, you're muted.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. I was gonna say, luckily it's archived for all time on YouTube. I can go back and check the link.
That's right.
And you can too.
That's right. That's right. Thanks for the reminder, Dirt.
All right.
Comments for this week. What do we want to start with?
Love it.
There were a lot of things this week.
Man, yeah. Yes.
Unlike
lots of Marvel,
the last couple weeks.
Well, it's just just another big week. Real quick. I wanted to just show that I did pick up my little shop, hole-in-the-wall shop, Carmine Street Comics, shout-out to Carmine Street Comics, was able to order enough copies of all these number ones to get all six hip-hop covers for me this week.
Oh,
nice!
Look at you two styling.
So, Avengers?
I said no to Spider-Man 29.9. No,
oh!
I actually like the cover, but I don't think I'm going to like the comic. I have to at least enjoy enjoy reading the comic also to get the hip-hop cover.
You know what's very funny? Yeah. I read Spider-Man 2099 on my way home from work today. I was pleasantly surprised, and Will Slaney's art has gotten really cleaned up by whoever's inking.
I actually read Spider-Man 2099 this week. Oh, what is that?
Wow.
Well, shock.
I mean, you could tell Slaney's using digital art, doing this
it's
stuff.
It's so
digitally.
Clean now, you know?
And everyone looked too mannequin-ish to me in the first volume. So.
But it looks so much cleaner than the Fearless Defender stuff.
I need to go back and see if Second and Charles has it, because if they have it for a regular price, I might get it. That's why I had to go and get the Sam Wilson cover.
Mm. Yeah, and I picked up all six all at once. Pretty. It was. I didn't have to go trekking anywhere else to get it, which was awesome. So very happy to get these.
Nice.
All righty. So this week's books.
I'm kind of curious to hear about the Chewbacca book.
You didn't read it?
Not yet.
Okay. Anyone else read it?
Yep.
Yeah, I read it.
Okay. So I think what everyone is kind of curious about is how they're going to treat this book, how they're going to tell the story of a character whose language we just don't understand. It's not even a foreign language. It's an alien language of grunts, growls, moans, and groans, right?
Well, so, I usually group kind of handled that in a similar
right.
way.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that because it's pretty much what, you know, it's pretty much the formula that we see in the Groot miniseries, the Groot series that we get, is that the story is basically told by the supporting characters,
mm-hmm.
and we're meant to see how they interpret Chewbacca's language, you know, what passes for his language and his actions to move the story along. So what we have here is Chewbacca kind of on a side mission post New Hope. And, you know, Chewbacca's found himself stranded on this, is it a planet? And he basically needs a part for his ship, and he's trying to find a way to obtain it and runs into a side story, a story of a young girl and her father who unbeknownst to Chewie are neck deep in a is it a mining operation that's kind of illegal?
Yes.
So that's pretty much it, and you know, things go from there. I like this, the Noto art. I love that Noto's developed this style that is clean, still contains a lot of detail, but I love the fact that he's able to, you know, churn this out. It looks like he's gotten this out mostly on time. You know what I mean? It's refreshing that the, you know, at least as far as I know, Noto's not subject to delays. He's kind of found a happy medium in churning out like this mostly detailed artwork, digital of course, but mostly detailed artwork on a timely basis.
Okay. Right. I'm like the only person that doesn't rush to read the Star Wars books when they first come out each week.
I thought the book was fine. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't have any particular problem with it, but at the same time, it didn't feel like it was
consequential.
Yeah, like this is any story that you really have to care that much about. And whenever they do a story where it's a kid in peril and the big monster has to come help the kid, it's always a little like, seems very familiar, you know?
Yeah, I see that.
And there was, well, and all of these like little side ones, they probably aren't quote unquote consequential to anything, but they are pretty much, hey, like, these are stories that are happening, you know, after this happening. There may be something out of it as will come to happen in one other book we'll talk about. But you know,
but like Lando mm-hmm. gave us some key story information about a character that's
sure.
you know, and so but this kid in the Chewbacca book, you've never seen this person again, so
right.
You know, it's just not really gonna, you know, matter.
But it might be the mission that he's on that might be the thing that kind of once, because you gotta feel it's probably gonna wrap around once they finish that, you know, this part of it, then they'll get into why, you know, what Chewbacca was really out there for. We would hope anyway.
Right, because he is transporting something, and I think that's yes. that's the subplot that will lead us to, you know, a greater connection to the other books, the other Star Wars books.
Right. I kind of like the fact that, like, during the whole story, is like, well, you know, we can't understand what he's saying. And the little kid was like, I don't know what you're saying, but all right, sure.
And that's also one problem with it, is that you don't really know. Sometimes he makes sounds and they're growls, but they're kind of friendly, and sometimes he makes them, and they're low and kind of scary, and sometimes right. they're just loud and over the top, and all they can really do is make the letters big or make the letters small.
And then all you have is the person you're talking to react from it some kind of way, which in this case was not totally right, but you kind of get a sense of, you know, a few panels away, you kind of get a sense of what he ends up saying or meaning, but
yeah. Right, but yeah, I was about to say Noto does a good job of conveying what we should be thinking is happening in his layouts and just the way the story, you know, the panels are laid out and the actions of the characters. So you know, there's a little bit of visual storytelling here that plays a part.
Yeah, like around the part where he picks up his, she finally strikes a nerve, and then he decides to help her.
Exactly.
Bowcaster, and she's thinking, and he's like, well, all right, fine, you're leaving. What you gotta do? And
right.
Then
spoiler alert. And I'm like, ah. Yeah, I was about to say spoiler alert. She basically says, I guess you don't know what it feels like to be a slave. And that's the bit that strikes the nerve.
Yeah. Ooh. And he was like, all right,
cold burn.
Yep. Yeah.
But we didn't get Nala or the rest of his family in the
treehouse. Oh, no!
What was the kid's name? It was the worst name ever.
I believe that's true. I don't know. I tried to block out the two, but that was a holiday special, wasn't it?
Yes.
I was going to bring that up earlier, and then I said, nope, not going to do that.
That's what I was hoping for. Like, I want to expand on that. Let's
love it.
His father is Itchy.
His brother is
Scratchy. He's a shower.
Yeah, I was about to say Scratchy.
Oh, the kid is Lumpy.
That's what, yes. Yes.
Oh, oh no.
I forgot about that.
We're Nala, Itchy, and Lumpy. I feel like I'm not getting my Chewbacca's worth here.
Oh no!
Oh yeah, even speaking of in this issue, even when the girl was asking him his name, she was like, I don't know how to pronounce Sam.
That's funny as hell.
So, but it was about this was a decent book. Like I said, we don't know where it's heading or if it's gonna, you know, come have any kind of details that's gonna be of any meaning. But enjoy a Chewbacca story. Here you go. All
right, cool.
Well, I guess while you read, want to get to the other one?
I didn't read the other one. You guys read it?
No, nope.
I read it.
I haven't read the one from last week yet. So
same.
Yeah, I haven't read two either.
Mm. Yeah, I finally went back and read that one after the show last week. So we will get to Journey to the Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire #3.
Yeah.
Mouthful. Okay, so here we have, which I'm actually kind of digging this book for a slight reason. Like, we know our original crew shows up and is there prominently, but realistically, it's kind of focused on this other couple mm-hmm. that are with the Rebellion. You have those pilots whose name, Shayna Bay, and I think that's right, and her husband starts with a K. I don't know why I can't. I'm blanking on these names right about now. But
it
might be Itchy. hey, you know, when you're out in the field for times, things happen. And speaking of, one of the missions that happened was what we see is Shanna, who's a pilot, is on a mission with Leia on Naboo, trying to get support to, I guess, try to get the Senate back together. And they went to Naboo just to get their support. But what ends up happening is the remnants of the Empire have a plan, supposedly from the Emperor, who is dead. But a messenger comes and says, hey, look, we got this plan. Do it. So a couple of Star Destroyers went to Naboo to kind of disrupt the system or pretty much destroy the planet, I might as well say, using weather dominators.
Oh, no. Seriously?
Kind of, yes. They basically deployed some satellites. And I'm kind of spoiling last issue because some of this kind of started out. The end of the last issue just happens. But now we get into the part where Leia and Shayna are trying to deal with it, which Naboo at this point has no military of sorts. But the Queen's like, nah, that's not entirely true. So they go and find some starfighters, which coincidentally only find three that are working, and guess who gets to pilot them? So we have Leia, the pilot Shayna, and the Queen, who coincidentally is pilot certified before she got into office. And then they go up in space and they start fighting that. Now, on the other side of the token, we have the husband. I should really look up that name. It's like Ken or something like that, who is on a mission. Huh?
I'm just going to say that every time from now on.
Sure, go for it. who is on a mission with Han Solo, with because apparently he's a part of some I can't remember the group he leads, but it is a squad. Let's just go ahead and say, and he's with General Solo, who is kind of cleaning out Imperial bases that they come across. And this one in particular, they had surrounded and went into. I think it was an intelligence base. So they went in, started capturing people, and they were on a mission. On both sides of these stories, they get to points where it looks like there's some dire circumstances that could happen to both of the characters, but it doesn't. And at the end of the Solo mission, they find out about the mission to Naboo that the Empire went and go to wipe them out. And then they go to help, which, you know, ends up being they get there just in the nick of time, because as Leia and Ashana and the Queen are, you know, fighting a good fight, another wave of TIE fighters come in and it seems kind of hopeless. But like I said, everybody comes in to the rescue. You got Lando in the Falcon and a few other people, and they go ahead and clean up, you know, everything else that goes on. And scene to where at this point of the what is it, 4-issue miniseries that this is, we have seen pretty much all of the original crew, with the exception of one, I think, which may have shown up in the first issue. I can't remember. But next issue is going to take care of that. So, but otherwise, that it was a pretty decent read. Oh, there was one other thing that did happen, which is there's a spoiler article out there. And matter of fact, go ahead and ring the spoiler bell.
Spoiler bell.
So during Leia's part of the mission, they went and find the starfighters. And as soon as they went into the room that the starfighters were in, Leia gets cold.
Ooh.
Which, you know, as you know from the trilogy, she is force sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she also gets a, let's say, a vision of a person who looks strangely Darth Maulish. It's probably somebody in the same race, but the markings on his face look pretty much just like it was Darth Maul himself, but we know that could not be the case, unless you watch Clone Wars in the later seasons, but that's a whole different story. So there is that. So they're saying that, hey, this is a spoiler, this could be a spoiler for a major issue, for a major fill-in for Force Awakens, as a part of that anyway.
Right, okay. So how many more issues left in this?
Just to think the next one is the last one.
Okay, so it gives us a chance to catch up before the end of the series. All right.
Which I guess is coming out every 2 weeks, because this one, the 3 just came out.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, 2, excuse me, just came out. But.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to do Batman and Robin Eternal number 2.
Go for it.
Paul Pelletier was the artist on this one. It mostly deals with Dick rescuing, well, actually, he gets there too late, but what was the dude's name? The guy in all white that looks like Storm Shadow, Orphan, in the first issue, has shown up at Harper Row and Spoiler's apartment to attack Harper Row.
I almost hit the spoiler bell for that.
I thought that's what you were doing.
I was reaching for it. I was like, oh, wait, Spoiler's a character.
Sorry. But so yeah, she's back, or she makes her introduction here. Cassandra Cain jumps in to help protect Harper. It is one cool scene, for one funny scene where Spoiler, I guess, like walking home with some groceries or whatever, and she like sees Dick outside the apartment, and like Dick does this, you know,
acrobatic
move to climb up the fire escape or whatever to get to their apartment window, and Spoiler's kind of just sitting there dumbfounded and gawking at him. So then, I guess Orphan gets away. So Dick's in their apartment with Harper, Row, and Spoiler. And he's like, because, you know, he's been gone from Gotham for however many months or a year, or whatever comic book time. And he's like, where are these new teenage heroes coming from nowadays? He's like, can anyone just go buy a suit somewhere? There's a couple flashback scenes of Dick and Bruce as Batman and Robin chasing down Scarecrow, and then they get hit with the Scarecrow toxin. Trying to remember what else happened. Oh, they reach out to Red Hood to sort of warn him that, you know, someone is putting a hit out on what seems to be, you know, teenage or costume heroes and whatnot. But he already has Cassandra Cain, I think, pinned down in a restaurant somewhere, and that's where the issue ends. So we don't really see anything else with Mother this issue. So it's kind of one of those, like, nothing really too significant happens in a weekly comic issue.
All right. Try to catch up with that.
Well, since you mentioned, want to get anybody read Red Hood and Arsenal?
Yes.
It's that too.
Mm-hmm.
I put down for my note, still remains one of the most entertaining books for me.
Yeah. The book's still fun.
They team up with Batman to take on Underbelly, and then we get this.
Oh, God.
nice.
And we get the longest explanation of how he came to be a villain.
Beat me to it. I was like, this might be the most convoluted origin story for a villain I've ever seen.
That's been retold because he said it before in a you know, slightly less words.
He said it twice this issue,
He was like, okay, you didn't get it the first time, so I'm just going to recap this again.
Yeah, he basically says, you know, you spoke before of what happened with this, that, the other, explain this, explain this, explain this, but what you failed to realize was this, that, the other, explain this, explain this, explain this.
Which I guess I can only assume just goes like, okay, we need to kind of spread this out and to give Arsenal some time to do whatever he's going to do. So,
well, I mean, I can understand the idea that, you know, it is a monthly book, and so, you know, you will forget details from issue to issue, so you do have to go in and recap somewhat. But I don't know. I think there could have been a faster, easier, more succinct way to get through it than what we saw in this issue.
Especially for a guy who probably won't be hurt from again.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that like we're retelling the Joker's origin here?
There'll be some random like Batman, you know, the Batman Christmas special or something with, you know, Lumpy and Itchy, and they'll do a recap of the Underbelly, and he'll make a return somehow.
I love Tim's Southern inflection on that, too.
It did make me wonder, with this big, long explanation, could he be a villain to be used in Batman's rogue gallery down the line?
I mean, potentially.
They tied him to the Joker somehow, some way.
Speaking of the Joker, there is a tie that shows up in the end of the book, so hey.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I blocked that out of my mind because I was so disappointed when I got to that point.
Yeah, that was like, really? What's going on? Because they already had another storyline kind of starting up, you know, because there's that other, like, the mimes and whoever else got, you know, introduced in the last
issue. Was it Manifesto something?
Hero Manifest, Hero Manifesto, I think, is the name of the group or whatever. So I'm like, that's
another terrible name.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, that sounds more of a...
Hero Manifesto is probably one of the worst names ever.
Yeah, and it didn't sound like a villain group either, so...
Like, they're the tag team that opens, like, that does the show while the pay-per-view is still free. You know, that's the one they get
away before... Oh, no! They're the dark matches.
Yeah, before the paywall goes up, that's the one everybody gets to watch.
And I want to say again, I do enjoy Dennis Midry's art.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. Fun little cartoonish style.
I mean, I did like, you know, Jason... He knows that Bruce Wayne is gone, that this is Batman. He discusses the differences between... You know, he doesn't know it's Commissioner Gordon.
Right.
But he does know... He can tell that it's someone else. And he's like, well, this is why. Bruce would have done this, or Bruce would have said that. Bruce wouldn't have done what this guy's doing. So I like that you get the analysis from that point of view. That was interesting to me. And I especially like the part at the end where Red Hood runs into... I guess I won't spoil it, but runs into someone...
Or that person runs into him.
Well, technically. Yeah. And I liked, you know, how they played off that, because that is something that has to be addressed in his book. I mean, he is a member of the Bat family, right, even though he doesn't show up all the time. You know, he's not used a lot in the Bat books. Like, you know, Jason Todd has made several appearances, and Dick Grayson appears, but Tim Drake is what I meant to say, not Jason Todd. This is Jason Todd. Anyway, but, you know, I just like getting that extra analysis on the new Batman character and how he reacts to him, because that just brings it back that he is a member of the Bat family, even if he's not used that much.
Right.
And I do enjoy Jason Todd's inner monologue.
Yeah, because that part with him, and I guess spoiler alert, he does run into Bruce.
Well, that's what I was trying not to spoil.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you meant the other one, but sorry. Anyway, he runs into Bruce, and they have a little tete-a-tete, even though Bruce doesn't know who he is and whatnot. And that whole scene was really nice and touching. You can safely say that Jason seemed like he has gotten to a place now with that whole thing, you know, or it can be inferred from the interaction.
Yeah, he's in a much different mental space
exactly
than he was a few years ago.
Right. Now, the end of the book,
Yeah. If you haven't read this yet, everybody, I'm just going to let you know, stop before you get to the last page.
Oh, no.
Right before you get to the last page, just stop, finish it there. Just forget about that there's any more to the book and just be happy with what you got.
You know, I'm not I know of the character, and I know that character kind of supposedly takes a turn later on, but still, or at least gets fleshed out a little bit more later on, but still, not, really, it was not necessary. So I would almost co-sign what Dirk just said.
All right. So good book. It's definitely a series that's still worth reading. It's a lot of fun.
Totally.
Okay. What else do we got?
Starfire?
I skimmed this. I, you know, what do you guys think of it? Who read this in full?
I read it.
What do you think? I've caveat here is I have not been reading this as regularly as I was when it first came out, so I'm kind of lost as to where Starfire is, you know, in terms of, you know, like where she is in the story and what's really happened since that hurricane. So
this is kind of you might as well say this is kind of an in between arc. It seems that because the whole hurricanes thing is over, and right now she's in this issue, she's just kind of chilling, you know, like things have already happened with the hurricane and people are, you know, recovering and whatnot. And this is, I guess, going to start up another storyline with some dude that comes in with a weird power, correct? Because they meet up and they talk for a little while and then they have an interaction,
right? Because Corey is on the dating scene in whatever town this is in Florida. Is this Tampa? Do they name it? I forget.
I think it's like Key West or something.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it's all the way south, the far tip of Florida. So Corey's on the dating scene while she's trying to establish a civilian life for herself. And that's how she sort of, you know, that's a lot of the interactions that are in this book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how she comes across the person who I guess is going to end up being the antagonist. Maybe. You know, he has a weird power, and there's some weird happenings going on in her supporting cast, I guess. You know, they're all sort of, you know, it's very much like a sitcom-ish type setup where there's lots of interpersonal romances, you know, like intergroup romances, I mean, and interpersonal relationships amongst the friends, so...
Right. So, which, and the other part of this was like, yeah, you see her doing all of that, and then you see her looking for a job, to which I don't know if this part is going to come across anything, or this just happened to be something to kind of pad out the rest of the issue, where she's looking for a job, she gets this job offer at this, whatever aquarium is there.
Right.
And she has a chat with the dolphin in her own style. Because as I guess people know, you know, she kisses people and gets their language or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So she dives in and talks to the dolphin. And I guess from that she ends up getting the job.
So wait, is there a scene where she kisses a dolphin?
Yes.
It's just lip-to-lip contact. Yes.
So, yeah. Okay, this is definitely going to sell to a particular crowd. might not otherwise buy these books. Might want to grab a couple just for investment purposes.
Oh, boy.
Because I think even when that happens, like, there's the guy that's showing around, and then there's, the handler for the dolphin. They see her jump in and do this, and I think one of them remarks to it in some kind of way. Not in a bad way. It just kind of makes a remark about it. And I was like, huh, okay. And then they just keep on going with the book. The book is still, you know, pretty fun in its own style. It has a charm to it, let's say. But I don't know how long this is going to last. But you know, same crew. I don't know if it's the exact same crew, but it's the same people that's doing Harley's book.
Yeah, no, it's. I think it's the same crew because it's Lupacino and Art and Palmiotti and Connor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I believe that's true. Yeah,
doing the scripts.
So it's always guaranteed to be fun. You know, we'll see where it goes with it.
All right, cool.
Did anybody read Batman Superman?
Nay.
Yes. Well, going back to an earlier comment about the differences between the old Batman and the new Batman, of course, this is new Superman and new Batman trying to adjust to their relationship. And there are some dangling plot threads from the past storyline that filter over into this. And the return of Vandal Savage. So if anybody likes Immortals, Highlander fan, there you go. But with the relationship between this Batman and this Superman not working out so well, other members of the Bat family decide to step in and get involved at the end of the issue. And so going back again to what we were saying before about the Bat family and the other characters, if you know, you like seeing the teamwork and the interplay between those guys, it just happens right at the end of this issue, so it'll be setting up for the next issue. But we'll get to see Superman and the Bat family working together. We get to see Batgirl. We get to see Red Hood. We get to see Grayson. All of them coming together to help Superman fighting Vandal Savage and these warriors. And the story was fine. Like, I didn't have any problem with the story, but it is one of these, you know, moving people from one part to another to get ready for what's going to happen next issue. So this issue itself isn't necessarily anything key to the storyline. But the artwork in this was really kind of funky. I'm not sure.
Who was the artist?
Cliff Richards, which is a name I recognize, but I couldn't tell you what else he's done.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
Cliff Richards?
Yeah.
Doesn't ring a bell to me. I mean, don't confuse it with Cliff Chang, obviously, but that's the only Cliff that I can think of, you know?
But the artwork very much looks almost like he made 3D models and then positioned the 3D models and maybe sketched some facial expressions on top of it. And then, you know, use that as the basis, because a lot of the poses and a lot of the situations just had this kind of awkward action figure type look to them.
Gotcha.
And the skin is, you know, really, there's very little texture work to his artwork. There's, you know,
kind of Greg Landish.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, I'm not opening this.
it looks better though.
Who's the guy? Paul Galassi, I think is his name. He did a lot of James Bond stuff in the early 90s. I'm trying to think what else he's done recently. He did Time Bomb, which was a series that came out a few years ago. I know I'm missing something key that he's done, something big, Marvel or DC, but I can't think of it right now. But it has that same kind of look to it. So the artwork kind of put me off overall. It was just kind of hard to look at after a while.
Last page is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you have to get the whole family together.
So it seems he did Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Is Batman even in this issue?
Just at the beginning.
Oh, okay, there he is. Hmm.
And this artist did Buffy the Vampire Slayer and 6 issues of Wonder Woman from back in 06, it looks like.
Well, it says he did work on Terminator, Predator. He did some of the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, wait.
Dark Wars.
Yeah. Olmec, Huntress, Rogue.
He did, in 2002, he did the Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu series. He worked on the Squadron Supreme Hyperion versus Nighthawk miniseries.
Titans.
So, I mean, he's done a lot. Crimson Empire, Star Wars Crimson Empire 1 and 2. So, yeah, I mean, he's done stuff. And he's got stuff going all the way back to...
He's been around for a minute.
Late 70s, it looks like. So, but yeah, this had a similar feel to it, where it just didn't feel like there was a lot of texture work, just a lot of line work and shading, which gave a lot of detail. We just got a tweet from Matt Wang saying that, yeah, he did Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu and the Max stuff at Marvel. So, you know, again, this is not a key issue. This is, you know, moving pieces around, getting people ready for what's going to happen next. But we are going to get a Vandal Savage story, and I tend to like those. So I'm at least looking forward to Greg Pak's story going forward with the rest of the Bat team, even though this issue itself is not anything that's particularly special.
So you're going to love Legends of Tomorrow.
Probably, yep.
I don't know, it's on the CW.
At least it's not on CW Seed.
Yeah. Right. Oh, wait, and who the stuff I was mentioning was Cliff Richards, not Paul Galassi, by the way.
I'll save one of these DC books for later, but one more to talk about right now is a new Vertigo title, The Twilight Children. This is Darwin Cook doing the artwork, and Gilbert Hernandez did the story. And basically, if you look at this cover, you see this silhouette of a kid, and it's this eyeball. There's this yellow ball, and that's actually what this story centers around. This family in a looks like a Mexican coastal city. These giant yellow spheres just appear around town, and they appear, you know, in the night, and then they just disappear as quickly as they appear, and no one knows what they are or where they come from. No one wants to touch them. They're afraid to go near them. But, of course, a scientist from the local university wants to come down, take a look at him. The town drunk was in charge of looking after him, but then he passed out, and, you know, the spheres disappeared, and, you know, he's afraid he's going to get blamed for it. And you have all this, you know, small town, all these little characters and whatever coming around. But the hook for this particular issue, setting up the story, is that these kids are playing around, and they find one of these spheres. They just refer to them as balls all the way through this book, and it just feels weird saying balls as many times as this one did. These kids are playing with these balls. Let's move on from that. So these kids see the spheres, and inside one of the spheres, they think they see something moving around, like there's a person in there. So they reach out to touch it, and the three kids are struck blind, and now their eyes glow this yellow, much like the yellow of these spheres. And then a mysterious woman appears on the beach at night, only to be seen by the drunk. So you have just a whole bunch of weird stuff that comes together in this first issue that doesn't really give you anything. It doesn't really explain anything. It's not, I have no idea where the story is going or what this is doing. I don't know if these are aliens, if these are ancient demons, if these are, you know, manifestations of someone's bad dreams. You have no idea what the story's building towards or what it's doing, but it's Darwin Cook artwork, so it's damn pretty. And the story is just quirky enough and weird enough with all these characters that I liked it. You know, it's hard to come up with a particular reason why, other than everything is just well done. All the characters have their own voices. Every character seems to have their own subplot going on with the interaction between each other. And so it was just a really good laying out of all the different characters, a good, you know, pilot episode, if you will, for setting up this mystery. And I read it for no other reason other than the fact that it was sitting right in front of me, so I figured, why not? I had a couple minutes to spare, so I just picked it up and started reading it, and it's for no reason, I'm hooked on it, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I was just flipping through it while you were describing it there. Definitely, the Darwin Cook art is nice, so I'll be giving it a read this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty.
And fans of Archer appreciate you their use of balls.
Well, and they do it. Like after a while, I'm reading this book, and I'm like, surely he could have come up with some other word. You know, spheres or globes, or it looks like a balloon, or it looks like a light bulb. Nope. Just everyone just says, hey, look at the ball. That's a big, why do these balls keep appearing? Where are these balls coming from? What's with all these balls? I don't know. I just felt like I needed a shower after a while.
Oh, no. All right.
Anything else, DC? You guys ready to go to Marvel?
We can talk about Batman 45.
Oh, yeah, that did come out this week, didn't it?
Unless that was the one you were saving.
Nope, I'm saving the Superman one.
That's right. Yeah, never mind. Batman 45, I enjoyed this issue. We get to see the bat suit armor used in a new, different way. We got the introduction of a new element, because you can just create elements now, because comics.
It's science.
Yeah. Batmonium 206, I think it's called. let's see. I did enjoy the inclusion of Duke Thomas here. I'm kind of curious to see what role he's going to play going forward.
Is that the We Are Robin kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got to find out, I guess, some of his background and connection to the other guy that works on Team Batman that I can't think of the name of. You see Mr. Bloom in action. For some reason, the Jerry Powers lady wants to fire Jim Gordon from being Batman. She doesn't really give an explanation why. Except I guess he wanted to go out. He went off the grid and tried to go after Mr. Bloom himself, I guess, was the reasoning.
She wants someone who's more willing to fall in line, whereas, you know, Gordon is, I'm the guy doing this. It's my butt on the line, basically, so I've got to make some decisions out in the field. And she wants someone who's more...
soldier.
Well, someone who's more willing to be a cog in the machine as opposed to go out there and be an icon.
Gotcha. And yeah, that was pretty much about it. Another beautiful art. I like that we got to see Jim Gordon put in one of those crazy Batman situations where he has to use his brain to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So that was at the beginning of the issue when he was trapped in a furnace, I think it was. So.
He's counting down, like, this isn't working, that's not working, I can't get out this way, I can't get out that way, so I got to figure out some other way of getting through it. Yeah.
And that's about it.
I flipped through the book. The only thing I actually recall seeing were a couple of things. One, Jim Gordon basically naming the Mecha Robo Batman suit Rookie. That's the voice command that he has for it, the voice name that he has for it.
Yeah.
And there's a scene that was pretty visceral right near the end where Jim Gordon is basically getting his butt kicked. He's getting stabbed to death. I thought that there was a sequence on one page that was pretty... I don't want to say gruesome, but definitely visceral, because you could almost feel what was happening on the page. So that, you know, that's the one thing that stuck out to me, even though I didn't really, you know, I kind of gave it a quick perusal before the show, so that's what stuck out to me.
I did like... One of the things from Endgame was that a bunch of the stuff from the Batcave was... taken outside and now it's stuck sitting out there, and they're not supposed to, you know, move it off the lot because, you know, government, whatever. You can't just do things. You have to, you know, wait for the government to say it's okay to move stuff. And Bruce Wayne in his, you know, new life without any memory of being Batman has no idea what all this garbage is. And it's sitting next to the community center. So he decides, well, what the heck? We're a community center. We've got a bunch of kids. We've got a giant dinosaur and a huge playing card and this giant penny. And so he turns all this stuff into a playground, which I thought was, you know, it's kind of a brilliant reuse of all this stuff. For years, this has just been...
props.
Yeah, just decorations in the back of the Batcave. And this is Bruce Wayne's life now. And so now these same props that have been the backdrop of the Batcave as Batman are now the backdrop of him as this guy, just, you know, this loner guy who works at a community center. It was a fun way to work those things back into his life, even though his life is no longer Batman.
And I did like how they kind of were starting to plant seeds of the old Bruce Wayne. You can sort of see, like, he was saying, I forget the quote. There was a couple of instances where he seemed to be like, he wanted to do something, and keeping the souvenirs, just like he used to keep the souvenirs in the Batcave.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. Planting the seeds.
So, yeah,
I almost forgot this issue. This is Image Book. I Hate Fairyland number one from Scotty Young, artist and writer. It was a pretty cool issue. It wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be, but great art.
It wasn't as fun as you thought it would be? It
wasn't as funny as I thought it would be.
Hmm.
I mean, it had funny jokes, crude jokes in there, but it didn't make me, laugh as much as I had anticipated.
Hmm.
As you see the cover there.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
This is the, there's like an adult cover and a regular cover.
It's like Sex Criminals.
Not quite as adult as...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess to give the background, the kid, I forget the girl's name, she, as a kid, gets sucked into, like, the fairyland world, and all she has to do is find some magic key, and she can go home, so she's, like, granted this tour guide of fairyland to help her find the key, except to take, like, 28 years have gone by, and she hasn't found it yet, but... So, I guess internally, she's matured, like, 28 years, but she's still in the body of a kid, so you get all these... awkward moments where she's like eating mushroom people and she shoots a bazooka shell through the moon who's doing the narration at the beginning of the episode and his guts go everywhere, and then she's like using machine gun rifle on the stars, and of course the stars talk, so they're like, she's like murdering the stars, and is this her, this girl going crazy in fairyland?
Is this like, does this have a Red Riding Hood and like those type characters, or are they analogs of those characters, or is it just random?
It seemed like if it was analogs, I didn't get it. It just seemed to be like just random, like there's the princess of the land or whatever, she wants to put a hit out on this girl because she's been doing this stuff for years, but she can't. Technically, she can't, hire someone to kill her because any guest of the land has to be treated with respect or whatever. So she, like, hires a hitman to do it for her, who shows up at the end of the issue to, I guess, do that, just that. So, yeah, there's, like, Mushroom Kingdom people and a slug that looks like a hip-hop DJ or something.
I just kind of figured, looking at it, like, it would be a Wizard of Oz.
If I would have enjoyed it more if it was. Maybe yeah. I think that's what I was expecting it to be. Oh, yeah, it is funny. Her tour guide is, like, this little small, it's not even a hummingbird, but, like, some little small, like, flying insect guy. So when she first arrives in Fairyland, he's all, like, prim and proper with, like, a suit on and whatnot. But then when we catch up 28 years later, he's, like, got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth and got some, like, stubble on his chin, and his hat's all just tilted to the side and more caved in instead of being all propped up and crisp. So being her tour guide is beating him down as well. So that was, I liked him. But yeah, if it was analogs of the actual characters, it would have been more fun.
Hmm.
And I kept debating on whether or not I wanted to buy the first issue for this or not. Right now, I've held off just because it didn't grab me as much as I thought it would.
So. All right then.
Wait, is this a mini series or is it ongoing?
Who knows?
It's Image. It'll be announced as ongoing and end at 6, or it'll be announced as 6 and end up ongoing.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Anything else, Image? Anybody wants to talk about? Speaking of Sex Criminals, there was one of those this week, if anybody read it.
That's the only reason why I mentioned it.
I haven't read the last issue yet, so...
I was about to say, I'm a little behind, so... I
remember seeing the pink, the pink poly bags stacked up, piled up at the shop, so...
I did flip through Astronauts in Trouble, which I didn't realize was a Matthew Dow Smith book until this issue. What is this, issue 5? Mm-hmm. And I really like his artwork, so I may actually go back and read it just because I really like his artwork. But, I mean, I think there's only like one or two people at our store that read it, so I have no idea if it's worth reading or not, but I guess we'll find out by the time 6 comes out.
I think I might have read an issue of this in the past. I can't remember. This is the one where there was like, back in the 650s or whatever, and there was a rocket that got stolen or something.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's made to look like one of those old sci-fi movies, and it's
right.
All black and white, which is one thing I like Matthew Dow Smith's artwork. It's like he starts with a Mike Mignola type style and then cartoons it up a little bit more. So it looks more like the guy who does Invincible. I can't think of that guy's name. But it's
Ryan
like
a Otley.
Yeah. So it's like he starts with Mike Mignola and works in Otley into it, which is, it doesn't seem like it should work, and it does. So I mean, it's once I started flipping through it and I saw that it was in black and white, that was actually something that drew me in a little bit more, made me a little more interested in reading it. So just based on that, I'm going to go back and read it. So we'll see.
Okay. Marvel? That's what page 70 was waiting for.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to do A-Force first? Since that's where Doug has stopped. This was the final issue of the, I guess, 5-issue limited series before it's relaunched in all new, all different Marvel Now.
Marvel Now. All new, different. All new, all different.
Basically, the residents of Arcadia, which I keep forgetting that men actually live on the island.
Yeah.
Joined in and fight off the demon zombie horde. Singularity sacrifices herself, I guess, to stop
spoilers. Sort of.
Well, yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good issue, though, because you start with She-Hulk's, it was like, you know, she's, you have failed the city speech, or basically about herself, and then just rallies the troops, and which was kind of funny, because you mentioned this part about the men, and it was like, everyone who stands up to fight this, you know, in this battle will be a heroine of Arcadia, and, you know, whatever. Then you see the big splash page next, and you see all of the people, and then you see Bucky like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, okay, sure.
I guess the first male I recognized was the back of Captain America.
Right.
I was like, huh?
Well, yeah, I was about to say there's a Commander Rogers running around too.
Right. So, and then it goes into the fight where you see, like, basically groups of people fighting together, and all of the groups kind of make sense with each other, you know? Like, you see Black Widow and Mockingbird, and they're all quipping, you know, at the same time while they're in the fighting. You see, like, I think Elektra and Psylocke and what, in one, you know, panel. So, it just basically goes to panels.
Mary Jane.
Yes, there we go. Yeah, and it looks like there might have been something more there with that one. Or maybe that's just me reading into it. Who knows? But, but yeah, that whole section with the fight was really great. I enjoyed all of that, especially the running conversation in between it. You know, and like I said, all the groups that were kind of put together or just happened to be together while they were fighting. And then, like you said, Singularity comes in, just swoops in and cleans everything up. So.
Yeah.
Was this in a part of the battle world that was anything else was happening, or is this its own?
It's kind of its own thing.
Right.
The Thor's interfered because She-Hulk crossed the domain over into the Days of Future Past, I think, or whatever.
Yeah.
With Sentinels.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. And then they ended up coming back to Arcadia, and they found out that Loki was the culprit all along. Which go figure. And then Loki ended up blowing up part of the wall, which starts this whole battle off.
Mm-hmm.
Which blew which is part weird. Of the thing.
Right. Yeah, and that was the other thing. I was like, wait, is this before or after that? Or is this just like, I don't know, Siege is going on somewhere else down the line. And
he wasn't the entire shield, because when he got
up... Right, he was just part of it.
Yeah.
So there's actually... So I guess at this point, there are two holes in the wall, in the shield.
Well, I just kind of assumed with Thing being part of the wall, that he's just, in a sense, tied into the whole thing. So when there's a disruption somewhere along the line, he can feel it, and he can direct them towards that. Hey, there's something going on down here you guys need to check out. Or
that seems to be the case. Yeah, because even in Siege, like, you could see it was like, he just kind of, like, they call him up, and he's like, all right, send us over here. And then I guess he just envelops them, and then he goes to this other part of the wall or something. I don't know. But
yeah.
It did seem like that was the case, so... We don't know if this is before or after, you know, and I guess that point kind of doesn't matter, but we don't know if it's before or after Siege happened.
And, you know, probably at one point in time, it was a very well thought out place mm-hmm. in the storyline, but with all of the delays and whatever, it's, you know, anymore, you have no idea.
Right. Well, the weird thing about it is, like, okay, Arcadia is like a little island down here that just so happens to be near the wall, real close. I'm sitting here like, and maybe I'm just thinking about it as in our world, because I'm like, wait, there's something about that didn't seem right, but at the same time, I guess it still kind of fits, because the wall kind of goes all across the southern part of the world. So, it was like, yeah, here's this island here, and it's real close, and then all these zombies just come, looks like wading out, you know, to the island, as opposed to, like, swimming or anything. So, I don't know. But this book went out, you know, it got cleaned up because I figured it was going to be a knockdown, drag out, and there's going to be more deaths than others. But at the same time, it ended pretty clean.
Yeah, it was nice and neat.
Yeah.
It was a neat little conclusion to the story.
But not really a key part of the ongoing Secret Wars.
I think what it does, it's more of a key development in, you know, I guess the concept of A-Force, you know, seeing it in action and then kind of getting getting everyone familiar with this particular team dynamic so that when the A-Force team is introduced in all new, all different, it won't be so jarring. Right. You know, we've already had the all-female X team, but we haven't yet had the all-female Avenger team. So I think this is going, you know, this serves to at least show, you know, what the team dynamic could be, especially between the main Avengers characters. You know, we see, you know, Spider-Gwen and Elektra and some other characters on the cover, but the main A-Force characters are the ones that are in the A-Force number one coming in December ad with Nico Minoru, Dazzler, She-Hulk, and Captain Marvel, Medusa, and Singularity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we definitely get a preview of what the team dynamic could be like.
Right. And as we will see from another book, we also see, like, Singularity ends up, like, saving the day, but we also get a sense that, okay, well, here's the tie that brings her into our past Secret Wars, into the new X-Force. I mean, A-Force, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, cool.
What else? Uncanny Avengers number one.
So, yeah. I read this. Did anyone else?
Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
Okay, so Tim and I read this. And I think that, you know, Jerry Duggan writes this, and Ryan Stegman does the art. I think Jerry Duggan pretty much addresses the elephant in the room, which is how do you get along with Deadpool on an actual Avengers team? And a lot of this issue is dedicated to that particular dynamic, that particular aspect of the team dynamic. It's interesting that, you know, Duggan decided to just jump right in on that, and I think it's a valid point, you know, to explore, because it's obviously the question that's on everyone's mind. Homage to Yo Bumrush the Show is really a play on Deadpool, because it's Yo Bumrush the Chimichangas. You know, so you know, Deadpool is definitely a big player, at least in this first issue. You know, one of the things that I was kind of unhappy about, and we've discussed this before with regards to the lengthening of Secret Wars and when we're finally going to see a resolution to that, there are possible light, not even light, but let me say medium level spoilers for the fates of Reed and Sue Richards in this book, and I wasn't happy about that. But otherwise, I thought that the story, in the sense that it was a number one, that it's the first story establishing this group dynamic of Uncanny Avengers that incorporates the human, the mutant, and now the inhuman aspect of the population on Earth. You know, putting them together and creating this Unity Squad, and you know, with Deadpool in tow. You know, putting all that together was interesting, and I think that Duggan did a good job of kind of establishing, you know, kind of hitting what may have been kind of kept off to the side, depending on who was writing it. You know, like, how does Deadpool fit in? You know,
I thought it was a little too Deadpool heavy.
Well, I like that it was upfront that we dealt with it right away. But ultimately, like you said, you know, it was probably a little bit too Deadpool heavy.
Stop watching baseball.
Probably...
Stop.
I know. I'm assuming that tweet from Matt Lang was for you.
What? What?
But that said, I kind of want that variant cover, but two, I really don't like Deadpool that much, and that's probably why I probably will not pick up this book. And Uncanny Avengers for the last three times or last two times kind of been a hard book to start for whatever reasons, but at least the first volume picked up pretty decently.
Put it in the books. The New York Mets are advancing to the National League Championship Series. Suck it, Dodgers. Suck it, Dodgers.
Who are they going to be up against?
Suck it, Dodgers.
Is it the Utah Jazz that they're facing? Green Bay Packers? Who are they?
Jacksonville Jaguars. You know?
I love it. I love it.
Sports ball.
I love it. I love the fact, you guys don't understand, I am one of the most superstitious sports fans. So once the Mets took the lead, I would not leave the podcast. We were going to extend this mother until the game was over. I was not going to go to a main television. I was watching it on a tablet on a delayed feed, and I was just waiting for it to you know, waiting for the results. I'm watching my Twitter feed. Everyone's going crazy. All of Mets Twitter is going nuts. It's pretty cool, and I'm not participating. I'm just going to start retweeting. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
And stay tuned for another score. What is it? Sundays on
that's right.
CSPN.
On CSPN. CSPN, that's right. Another score. Let's go Mets.
All right, so back to comics.
Anyway.
I will say I was, because they probably mentioned it in this in you know previews, and I might have not caught it. But going into this, I didn't know which Human Torch that this was undercover. I didn't know if it was Johnny or the dude from All New Invaders.
Oh.
That's what I figured it was, since he wasn't involved in anything. Sense.
Yeah, because Johnny's supposed to be in Inhumans.
Yeah, but hey, he's in here too. I guess representing the Inhumans, or his MA, or, oh, like I say, with no team now.
I was tempted to read this one because of all the Avengers books. This is the team that I at least care a little bit about some of these characters, whereas the other Avengers books coming out, I just don't care about anybody on the teams. Mm-hmm. But I just, the Stegman artwork just does not work for me. It's just too...
It's like it looks like he's experimenting.
Yeah, he's more. Definitely...
It's definitely... very lumpy is the only word I can think to describe it. Lumpy artwork.
It's kind of a...
Kind of like Chewbacca's son, lumpy.
Oh, God, here we go again.
You're just going to bring that, keep going with it. All right. But this is kind of have a I can't place the style. It's like, almost like,
it's a mix of a lot of different influences. I can pluck out, there's a little bit of Quesada in here, believe it or not. You know, yeah.
I'm just thinking like Piss Gore's like a hip hop family tree style, and there's something else I'm thinking of, almost like a newspaper style that I can't think of.
Well, I can pick out, there's a little bit of Art Adams, which is always something he had. There's some Quesada. There's definitely some Quesada in here. Because I originally thought that the regular cover for Uncanny Avengers was a Quesada cover, and then I realized it was a Stegman cover.
Mm. Okay.
But yeah, I just couldn't, I don't know, the artwork just turned me off. I couldn't get into it.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing he's doing with the joints now is kind of odd.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess. And there's also like there's references to Johnny and Rogue having a thing, I guess, during the 8 months. So there's that.
Great.
And they make reference to like Wanda, I guess, maybe being on the team and leaving. I don't know if that's from the previous volume or during the 8 months or not.
Find out. And Scarlet Witch number one, whenever that shows. No,
let's see. The New Avengers.
There we go. Yeah.
Who read that?
Try to run through this real quick.
We actually got the hip hop cover on that one at our store.
The Piss Corps. Speaking of,
it's a weird lineup.
Yeah, I said the same thing.
It's all over the place.
Yeah, that was one thing I just couldn't. Like, I looked at this team and just no, I just can't. I don't care.
It actually kind of works though.
I like Al Ewing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I like I like Jerry Duggan. I like Al Ewing. But the first issues for these just kind of seem like hard for me to grasp.
Mm. Although this one didn't seem...
I don't know. Maybe it's being thrown into the story, quote unquote, 8 months later. Or just how wacky the teams are, but...
It just feels too much like a B team. Like, these are not... Except for Hawkeye, there's really not people that I would think of as being like, oh, that's an Avengers team I need to follow, you know?
Mm. No, I understand that. That's definitely... I mean, you have DaCosta there, Sunspot, who's obviously, raised to another level by Hickman towards the end of the his Avengers stuff. So, I would consider him, even though he's, considered by most to be an X-Men character, I think that he's probably the linchpin for the series, obviously, since it's his money that's funding the team, and, you know, it's his, they're taking his lead, so... You know, that I think if you're a fan of that of that particular development of the character, I think you'll read this book. And I like the fact that this is where, spoiler alert, a certain iteration of a certain member of the Fantastic Four appears.
Oh yeah.
That
was what I was alluding to with the last one. Because apparently there's some Secret Wars bleed over. Let's just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the case. I kind of, there's a certain thing I kind of like about this team. I thought it was kind of really crazy and didn't seem like it would work, especially with like Squirrel Girl, and then you got like, you know, a couple of young Avengers. And although it was kind of funny when Hawkeye came in, I kind of said the same thing that Roberto said. It was like, yeah, I wish it was Kate, which is what he basically said. But, you know, like, that she would have been better for this. But
then they already got two young Avengers on here, so.
Well, this is true, but, you know, you don't have a Hawkeye, so. Which actually brings me to this that just clicked for me. This book is starting to seem like a West Coast Avengers, and I'm giving it way more praise than that because I love the hell out of West Coast Avengers. So this kind of seems like that kind of a dynamic because, you know, it's like, hey, there's a bunch of, you know, Avengers that just got thrown together. They're on an island again because that worked out well the first time.
And they are on the West Coast, aren't they?
And they are on the West Coast.
They're right off the California. Yeah, that's a good... I didn't process that right away, Roddy. I'm glad you brought that up, because I did notice that they were in international waters off the coast of California, but I didn't process that this is the newest version of the West Coast Avengers.
Right. Although,
Hawkeye, he would have to be in this, right? Because the all-new, all-different Hawkeye is Kate and the Hawkeye from Old Man Logan, right?
Technically, no.
No, because both of them are in all-new Hawkeye.
How the first volume did the flashbacks to the past, this volume can do flashbacks or forward flashes to show them in the future.
So it will be Old Man Clint.
So flash forward.
It'll be
old man both of them, because Kate'll be older also, obviously. But it'll still be both of them.
And how much we want to bet that Hawkeye is not the traitor?
Well, I mean, they specifically said right there when he came in that he was
that's
the traitor.
That's a decoy.
Yeah, it's a swerve. Yeah, I know, right? Because I thought that was kind of strange. That's kind of when we talked about that before, or that part happened before, which I found it strange then, and even in reading now, I was like, okay. Even Roberto said, like, why would you tell me this, you know, now? And then Duggan's like, hey, you know, because I'm not treating you like you're dumb, basically, is what he said. So, and also we get, you know, Monster Squad, Dum-Dum Dougie Duggan. So there you go for all of that. And there's that whole S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, watching them thing that's going on, which makes sense. I mean, that's probably about the most plausible thing in the book. It's like, hey, you just bought AIM. You're starting up this Avengers thing over here, and you're out in international waters doing this whole thing. You need to be watched. So, like, yeah, you're right. Go for it. So whether anything comes out of anything out of all that.
All right, let's get going.
Matt Wang wants to know, where's Stingray?
Yeah, no. we let that part go. Although, who knows, he could show up. I think he did show up at something in the last probably 6 months or so, so that was kind of weird.
That's funny.
So what else do we have? We should be getting around to clicks soon, maybe?
Well, let's see. Wait, we got Spider-Man 2099.
Oh, got Sam Wilson.
Taught me into this issue since I didn't read it and didn't buy the hip-hop variant for it.
We're talking about Spidey 2099?
Yeah.
Yes.
I did not read any of the other series. I have not read Spider-Man since Doc Ock went away, so I walked into this pretty blind, and it was, you know, just basically, it's a number one, I might as well try something different to try to get into it, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I found it easy to follow. It laid everything out for a new reader like me, so I at least knew why he's trapped in this time, and what he's trying to achieve in order to get back to his time, and where he works in Parker Industries, and the people who work for him, and, you know, everything was explained well enough that I felt like I was kept up to speed with the story as it went along. And it even got to the point where there's a big, I don't know if you'd say it's a twist, but there's a big development at the end of the issue that even took me by surprise. I felt like, oh no, I'm concerned for the character that I just met.
Yeah.
And so,
I give Peter David a lot of credit for that. And yeah. I agree wholeheartedly with what Dirt is saying about this book, because as we were saying before, were we saying this before the show started or as the show started when we were talking about these books? You know, this issue is a solid issue, and Will Sliney's art has, in my eyes, come leaps and bounds from where he was on Fearless Defenders. It's cleaner, it's neat, it's much more finished. I may have to give a lot of credit to the inker on this book. I believe it's Frank D'Armata, or there's a color artist, and the color artist has supplied a lot of character and depth to Sliney's art, and it's definitely embellished to the point where it's very neat and tidy. As Dirt said, that last development, you know, I dropped off Spidey 2099 a long time ago, so there's a lot of reestablishing of the supporting cast in this, and I didn't realize that the supporting cast was going to develop in this direction even 8 months later, you know, with the time jump, and seeing it at this point, like Dirt said, I was, you know, I there was a dramatic development at the end of this that took me by surprise, and I said, hey, you know, I feel kind of impacted by this, like, you know, it hit me a little bit, and I was surprised to even feel that about this character who I know nothing about or very little about, and, you know, for this to happen, you know, for something like this to happen at this juncture was pretty, you know, it was pretty dramatic, one, and two, very effective in terms of, you know, giving you an emotional, giving the story some emotional depth.
So you know, having said all that, it definitely, for being a first issue, it's definitely one.
It's a stronger first issue.
Yeah.
It's a fairly strong first issue.
I'm very much looking forward to issue two, and I didn't expect to be. Kind of like Twilight Children. I read it just because it was there. I figured it's something new. I'd give it a shot, and by the time I got done with it, I thought, you know what? This is something I'm going to at least stick around for the entire first arc and then have to reevaluate, you know, what I think of it, because as of right now, this is something I want to read.
Some high praise.
Nice.
Let's see, Guardians of the Galaxy number one.
Oh, yeah.
Hip-hop cover by Sean Crystal and whoever Brunner last name is.
Shout out to the Far Side.
Yeah, really.
I enjoyed this issue more than I thought I would, just because I haven't been super crazy about Bendis' Guardians. I read it because it's a Bendis book, and more than likely it means it's important to the Marvel Universe. But
well, my son wanted to read it because he's been reading Groot, and so it's Guardians. He saw the movie, you know, he wanted to read it, so I read it first, you know, just to make sure it's rated T. It's not Teen Plus or M or anything like that, so I figured I'd...
No, there's no murder, bland murder use.
But I enjoyed it. You know, I have no idea why Venom's there. I have no idea why Thing is there.
Shake like, up the team, man.
Like, I don't know if any of that has been addressed before. I know Venom was in space, but I didn't. You know, I have no
right,
idea.
Venom, he took Captain Marvel's place as the, like the Avengers.
Right. Liaison or whatever.
Yeah, liaison.
Well, yeah, but how is he part of Guardians of the Galaxy? Like, is that explained anywhere, or is it just?
Yeah, that's yeah. As a part of the liaison to the guard to the Avengers.
That's, I see.
We're putting okay. on the team. Yeah.
So what about Thing?
Yeah,
he joined during the 8 months.
Okay, all right.
I was about to say they give a little bit of expositions to, you know, one of the thing, you know, at least one of Ben's reasons for staying. And for being there. And yeah. I like that. Bendis yeah. actually really filled that in quite well. You know, it's as kind of out there this particular bit of casting was. You know, when you read some of the things that Bendis wrote for Thing's, you know, inner monologue, it was great. And it made perfect sense.
Did it tie anything, just out of curiosity, to the Avengers? Because when Bendis had the Avengers book, he wrote Ben in on that one too. I think it was Mighty, or knew one of them too. Regardless, so I don't know, was there any tie there?
He was in New Avengers, I believe.
Right.
But no, there's no reference to that.
Okay.
I like the Valerio Shitty's Skeedy.
How do you say that name?
I can't. Have you ever met him at a con?
I don't go to cons, remember?
I'm yes, trying to you get do. His...
He hasn't been to one that I've gone to.
Yeah, but I don't think he's been to anything close
so
to
how, here. How do you pronounce his name?
Skeedy.
Oh, just like the wall to keep out the Mongolians.
There's one panel of pages that was pretty nice where it was Rocket and Kitty Pryde going back and forth, and he draws very expressive emotions on people.
Mm. Yeah.
So wait, that's the question. The Kitty Pryde thing gets explained, I'm assuming.
Not really.
No. Oh,
okay. Well, I'll read it eventually.
Star-Lord is the ruler of Spartat, so he's off ruling.
Okay, and figured that was the case.
I did like the stuff with him too, where his inner monologue of just, I'm so bored, I'm king, I should be able to just get up and walk out of here. Why am I stuck? You know, and he's listening to trade route taxation or something.
Yeah.
An episode one subtle dig there about, you know, trade route taxation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's where that's from.
But, you know, again, I did not read the last Guardians of the Galaxy series either, and this being something that you can pick up as a new reader, there's obviously questions about how this team came together that they don't give you those answers, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I felt, you know, my son, being only familiar with Guardians through the movie, you know, he knew who everyone was. You know, he didn't have any questions about, you know, who they were, why they wanted to be on the team. You know, just everything made sense. Everything worked out, even though when this book was announced months ago, everybody looked at it and was like, Venom and Thing and like, what? Like, how is this Guardians of the Galaxy and Kitty Pryde? None of that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know... But it all worked, and I thought it played well. It had humor. It had some great, like you were saying with the expressions, there's a lot of stuff when there's something on the table and they're not sure if it's a bomb or not, and they all start slowly kind of slinking away from it and hiding behind the furniture because they don't know if it's going to blow up or not. There was just some fun stuff in there. It was really well done.
Mm. So the last volume kind of ended with Quill making the decision. Well, we didn't see the decision, but we see him kind of thinking about it, and Kitty was there, and because it was after that whole, hey, Gamora's off. After she got powered and, you know, she's a danger to herself and others, whatever type of deal. But that was the only thing that seemed that's kind of a logical leap. And Venom was there also because he was still with the team with them. But outside of that, yeah, you don't really. I assume they're probably going to shed some light on that, though. And it's probably just as simple as like, well, since, you know, you're king now, I'll just take over for you.
Yeah.
And I like the end with the two surprises.
The return of a character and.
Yeah.
some new character.
Yeah.
Oh, yay. Yep. Okay. I wonder if this is going to be like, I can't remember which volume it was. It might have been the first volume where the team kept rotating because Rocket was leading that at one point.
Oh, you mean the Abnett and Lanning?
Yeah, like when they were going through Annihilation and all that kind of mess.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. All right. What else we got?
What about Sam Wilson?
Yeah.
This was an interesting one.
I enjoyed this as well.
I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this book.
Yeah, it's a potential click of the week for me.
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to figure out what mine is going to be and haven't decided yet.
So when I read this book, there was one particular scene which I found kind of funny, but kind of affecting to me. Basically, we start with here I have a sneeze coming on, but I'm going to try to stifle it. we basically start with Falcap and Misty Knight, basically kind of leading to a new status quo between Falcap and S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, we get to this point where, you know, we start with a mission, but we establish that Sam Wilson is no longer beholden to the United States government or the United States or to S.H.I.E.L.D. And there's a little bit of there's some flashbacks in this that detail how we get to this point. And it's interesting that, you know, one of the things that I always admired about Captain America, you know, Steve Rogers coming up, growing up, is that they basically, with some definite exceptions, they basically stayed out of current day politics. You know, they may have done some, you know, there may have been some allegory involved, but they basically stayed out of current day politics. So one, my understanding was that it was to try to keep the stories kind of as evergreen as possible, so that when you picked it up, if anyone picked it up, it wouldn't be necessarily tied to a particular era. You know, obviously they did a play on Nixon with some of the things happening with the president in the Marvel Universe at the time, but, you know, this is a definite jump right, you know, like head first into the current political scene and the current status of the United States as today. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see them, you know, tackle this head on. It's a new approach for Captain America, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
It's all new, all different.
Of course, there is one panel that Acuna draws and Spencer writes where I can hear the words coming out of my mouth, but it sounds so racist. You know, it's like you're sure as heck not heck fire. I went to heck fire, not my Captain America.
Oh yeah. Right?
But when you see the panel, I'm just like, oh, you blankety blank blank blankety blank blank. You know,
it's like, yeah, that's kind of the stuff, and it all fit too, because it's like, okay, yeah, all the flack he's getting and all that, like, yeah, that all kind of fits with, you know, the climate that's going on, especially around him in the book. So
exactly. So
he played it off well,
right? Mm-hmm. And what's funny is that longtime readers of Captain America, especially of the Grunewald run, will recognize one of the efforts that Sam Wilson makes in this. Cap, if anyone would recall, established his own hotline back in the 80s.
Right.
And this was a telephone hotline. This is only different in that it's social media based. But it's funny that, you know, the same idea of Cap kind of breaking free of government chain of government control of his activities and in an attempt to reach out to the public sets up a hotline. It's kind of cool. It's kind of funny that there's a parallel, you know, in today's social media, you know, in this book.
And you know what, you mentioned that, and I do remember that, and totally forgot, because I was thinking, I was like, well, he's just clearly taken out from what Mighty Avengers just did, you know, with Luke Cage and them. But I was like, you're right, this does go way farther than that.
But right, this is a Captain America story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But yeah, this was good. I'm kind of digging what potential, you know, dynamic between Sam and Misty now, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting to Misty in the book, they pulled Misty Knight completely out of whatchamacallit, completely out of the Power Man and Iron Fist stuff, but maybe you'll see her there too.
Yeah, I would imagine she'll probably show up there. So, but then of course D-Man is there as the operations guy, I guess.
That's weird.
I was like, oh wow, of all the pulls to bring up.
But it was funny.
Died like three or four times already?
At least once, yeah.
No, I don't think so. He definitely had psychological problems. Are you thinking of Renew Your Vows?
No. I just read recently the collection of U.S. Patriot when that guy took over as Captain America, and Captain America became the Captain.
Right.
And D-Man supposedly died in that storyline.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he didn't die in that storyline, because he actually reappeared and was like a homeless hobo when Kurt Busiek and George Perez relaunched the Avengers way back when.
Right, I remember that because I remember that
but
one.
He was
I thought dead. That was wasn't that after Reborn? Heroes Reborn? Wasn't that
yes.
after that?
Yes, so that was Heroes Reborn.
Yeah, so maybe he did. What you saying? He didn't die before that?
Oh, maybe he did. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. But maybe he got put back.
I'm not the world's leading expert on Dennis Dunphy.
Yeah, wow. You know.
But you know, it kind of goes back to what you were saying about the hotline. He established the hotline just like Steve did. Well, that happened in the storyline with the captain right before
that, yeah.
One of the reasons why there was tension between him and the government was because he established the hotline. And they were saying, oh, you work for us. And he says, no, I work for the people. But with the way Marvel does their history with that Elastic history, I don't know if any of that story still stands or not.
That's a good point.
You know, he might have never had a hotline in the current Marvel universe. It's hard to tell.
Good point.
Let's see. Only other Marvel book I've read was Ms. Marvel number 19.
This is pretty good.
Skim through that one. Yeah.
This is pretty good. I like this. My notes basically sum up my thoughts in one sentence. This is pretty much what you would do at the end of all things if you weren't out being a jerk and looting and stuff.
Mm. Wait,
you
know,
you basically spend time with your loved ones and you end up, you know, closing up loose ends.
Yeah. Like it was a real touching story. Matt Wang 97 just said he died in Brubaker numbers 2 run, killed by Sharon Carter, I think. D-Man was killed by Sharon Carter?
Really?
Well, see, there you go.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Like that part I don't remember, which means she's killed two people, but that's a whole other story.
She's killed a lot of people.
I'm just saying, significant.
Like the many deaths of Sharon Carter.
Yeah. Seriously.
Worst girlfriend ever. That's your subtitle.
No. You know what's funny? Very, very quickly, at New York Comic Con, there was this one young lady dressed up as Sharon Carter in the white jumpsuit. And I walked past and I said, excuse me, is that a Sharon Carter costume? And her and her little friend turned around and said, yes. And I said, that's an excellent costume. And as I kept walking past, it was the cool, someone recognized me, chatter that you always love when, you know, you're dressed as someone, as a character who's not as mainstream and someone recognizes you, you kind of get that rush when someone actually does. So I felt good kind of giving that kid some validation. Like she actually did a really good job with the Sharon Carter costume. So shout out to her, despite all the crap we're talking about Sharon Carter just now.
All right.
So Ms. Marvel,
it's the end of the volume. What's the slogan? Everything dies.
There you go.
Her mother knows her secret. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Where's the bell? Bell.
It's not that big of a spoiler.
Is it one of those things where she just learned, or one of those?
I've known
the whole time.
Yeah, she's
not the whole time, but she figured it out.
She put clues together.
Yeah, she figured it out. It was one of the classic kind of stories where if you've ever read one of the alternate stories for Aunt May finding out about Peter, she finds out basically. Spoiler alert. By figuring out that whenever Ms. Marvel is off doing something, Kamala Khan, she notices that Kamala Khan is sneaking back into the house around morning prayer time. So, you know, she kind of put two and two together based on that.
Right. And then they have a nice little talk, and then her dad comes through, and then and like you said, they start having these moments. And what they end up doing seems like, and I'm not, hopefully this doesn't sound bad, ends up being a dance party. Well, one, does it say anything reference? Two, ends up being a dance party that seems to turn into a Bollywood production for like a panel or two. And then Kamala goes off and have her little talk heart-to-heart with Bruno, and thus ends the book. But the whole read was pretty, well, from what I skimmed, it was pretty cool, you know, and it just fades to, well, white in this case.
Yeah, so. But has me looking forward to the next volume when things kick off. She'll be an Avenger, she'll have fame, and of course all the trouble and drama that comes with fame.
Indeed.
Interesting. I like this book. This is a candidate for my click of the week because
I
liked how warm it was, and like I said, this is the story of a hero dealing with the end of the world, you know, who's not on the forefront. So I like the way, G. Willow Wilson handled it.
All right, we're all tweeting right now, so...
Clicks of the week,
Wait.
Oh, yeah, you still have yours.
Well, but I still have another book. We got the final issue of Civil War this week.
Oh, yeah, I haven't read that.
And I really enjoyed it. Again, we got the big swerve in the last issue that we found out that the Skrulls had actually invaded.
Right.
Because, as you know, the Skrull invasion was the story that followed Civil War. So in this universe where Civil War never went away... the Skrull invasion became more of an underground movement instead of this big in-your-face type thing. And they had to figure out how to stop the Skrulls. And this ties up perfectly the feeling I had reading the first issue, where I read the first issue and I felt like Charles Soule really tried to make a point that both sides were not that different from each other.
Right.
You know, as much as people, you know, the whole point of Civil War was to pick a side. Which side are you on? Are you with the red or are you with the blue? And they really pushed that hard. When he came to this story, he really made it more of the red and the blue really aren't that different. It's just, you know, a matter of how you may address something head on or more subtly. But for the most part, they both want the same outcome. They're both, you know, fighting for the same thing. They're just not always doing it the exact same way. And that really was tied up with a nice little bow on top at the end of this issue, where the two sides were brought together with a common enemy. And once the common enemy was understood, then everybody was pretty much like, okay, well, you know, we're not that different from each other. There isn't a reason why what goes on between us has to keep going on. There is something more that we have to fight for. There is something bigger and something else that we have to take on. And it ended in that classic what-if style. Like, if you remember the what-if books, at the end of a what-if story, it's like the entire world has to change.
Right.
Key characters have to die. Something big has to happen. There's some huge calamity. And, of course, this ends in that, you know, classic world-changing style. And even though once we got to the end of it, there really wasn't any big tie-in to Secret Wars. This is not a key book that has to do with the downfall of Doom or the inconsistencies with the battle world as a whole. As a volume following Civil War, if this was like a sequel, in a sense, to Civil War, with a, you know, what if it was slightly, the ending was slightly different in the story.
They kept going, right.
Yeah, this was very well done, and I enjoyed this a lot. And I've been disappointed by some of the other books that I thought would be a bigger part of Secret Wars.
Right, I think we all have been.
Yeah, but this one, I was happy I read it. Like, I really enjoyed reading this, and I could see myself on a, you know, Sunday afternoon in a couple months just sitting down, grabbing all five issues and reading them as one straight shot, because it was well done and it was a lot of fun and it told a good story, and I just enjoyed it overall.
Cool. Okay, I just got a shout out, a tweet from Noah Syndergaard, New York Mets pitcher, who's nicknamed Thor because he's this tall, you know, dude of, you know, Danish ancestry, you know, Nordic ancestry, who throws 100 miles an hour. So he tweets out, "Our enemy has been vanquished. Odin is pleased. Hashtag let's go Mets." That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I got to retweet that.
Sports.
Hey, it's related somewhat to, yeah, right, to what we're doing. All
right. Anything anyway. Else before we get into clicks?
I don't have anything. We're just...
Rapid Fire, Captain America White number 3 is cool, especially if you're a fan of Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb's take on these characters in these color-themed books. We did Civil War number 5, and I think we covered everything else that I read, so that's the only rapid fire.
Okay. Anyone want to do their clicks?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to throw out my click of the week because the discussion basically helped me settle on it. Ms. Marvel number 19.
Good one.
You know, I like you know, we especially with you know, the discussion, you know, kind of cemented it for me. It was you know, a really cool wrap up to this volume of Ms. Marvel, and we're in a good position to jump into the next stage of her evolution, you know, being a member of an Avengers team. Or at least a probationary member.
So you must know theirs, or should I go ahead?
Go for it.
Go, yeah.
All right. Wait, am I muted?
No,
we got you.
There was a pause on my side, but...
Okay, my button just popped up saying, "Hey, you're muted. Are you talking?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm talking. I'm not muted."
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of instances during the show where you kind of went in and out very briefly, so I was wondering about that.
All right, well, my pick of the week, my click of the week, is one that we have not actually talked about yet. I was saving it for this, and that is Superman, Lois, and Clark number 1. I've talked before about how I love the time travel stuff. I love the crisis stuff. I love parallel universe stuff. For me, Dan Jurgens is the Superman writer guy. He's the guy who was head of all the Superman stuff in the early and mid-90s, all the Doomsday stuff, the Panic in the Sky. He took over after John Byrne basically restarted everything, and he pushed for the next few years. And so in Convergence, with as horrible as it was and with the mess that turned out to be, one of the things was we saw a bunch of these classic characters go back in time to Crisis on Infinite Earths in order to fight that fight differently, and hopefully they could win it this time. And we found out that they did, but we found out only because they put a blurb, a little text box in there that says, "Hey, we went back in time and we won," and that was it. You never heard anything more about it in Convergence or anything since. Well, here we finally get some of the answers that They were able to defeat Anti-Monitor. That the time stream kind of tried to fix itself. The multiverse came back. And characters like the original Hal Jordan and Supergirl and Barry Allen Flash all ran off to different parts of the universe, different parts of the multiverse to find where they belong. And somehow Lois and Clark and their son Jonathan ended up in the New 52. And he was there at the original battle with Darkseid, watching the new Justice League team come together. And right as he's about to intervene, Superman of the New 52 shows up in the battle. And so he steps back and he decides not to get involved. And so he came up with a new identity, and he and Lois just decided they were going to live out their lives. They're going to let the heroes of this world be heroes, and they are going to raise their son and just give their son a quote-unquote normal life, is what they set out to do. Well, of course, the way Lois is as the investigative reporter, she knows who all the bad guys are, and she knows who's doing what and who's connected with what evil organization. So she started writing a bunch of books under the name Author X and getting exposés out there. And while she is going through the underworld, laying out all of these secrets, he's been keeping tabs on all his old villains. And he's been trying to keep an eye on who's coming into their own, because this universe is a younger universe. He's been watching people who he knows are going to become villains, and he's surprised in this universe as people who he thought were going to be key villains in this timeline are not becoming key villains, and people who he's never heard of before are taking over as these villainous roles. So these changes of the New 52 are changes that he's been tracking as well and keeping an eye on. And we see a growing threat to Lois as she investigates Energang, which was the high-tech mafia that they fought in the early 90s in all those Superman books that I grew up on, which is great to see them come back. But then we also see some new villains, some new superpowered villains in a dark corner of the universe that will be the challenge that Superman's going to have to face. And so as we see this new Superman, this new status quo, the New 52 universe, Lois and Clark are not together in the New 52, Superman's now depowered, all of that stuff, we have our classic Lois, our classic Clark. They're still married, you know, they still have their classic relationship together. And even though the time is different, these characters are still the same. And it feels like these are those classic characters. And so this is as much of a throwback to that and an homage to those stories. It is charting new ground, and it is working to, you know, explain some of these changes in the universe. And even though technically DC is no longer the New 52 after Convergence, it is that universe, and we're seeing how they're reacting to that and playing along with all of it. And so I love the story. Like, everything about the story is me being a fan of comics who, you know, grew up in the late 80s, early 90s reading all these comics. This is that perfect, you know, encapsulation of that and mixing it in with what we have in the New 52. But also the artwork is by Lee Weeks. And Lee Weeks is one of those artists that I've always felt was one of those great,
underrated, underappreciated.
Yeah, he's just always been fantastic.
He's consistent. He's got a very consistent line. He adapts very well to different characters. We recognize a lot of Lee Week's work on some of the more street level Marvel characters like Daredevil and Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and to see Lee Weeks producing work for Superman, where in this like kind of really immense, kind of applying this immense scale to Superman with the barrel chest and all that, it's pretty cool to see him, you know, kind of diversify the look and adapt and modify it so that, you know, he can produce like a consistent, you know, Superman. It's pretty cool. I didn't read this. I wanted to start it, but I ran out of time before the show. Explain to me how he coexists, they exist in the same continuity, correct?
In the New 52?
Yes, or post New 52, right?
The not 52, yes.
Right. Right, because right. I flipped to the first couple pages and he's an onlooker.
Yeah, so basically when they went back in time, it was Hal Jordan, the parallax version in the green armor, trying to redeem himself. You had Supergirl, right. Who had died in the crisis. You had Barry Allen, who had died in the crisis.
Right.
They all went back to fight the Anti-Monitor in Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1986. So they went back to 86 to fight the Anti-Monitor as he tried to destroy, and the DC universe was reborn after Crisis. Well, they defeated the Anti-Monitor, but it was enough to save the multiverse at that point in time, but not enough to keep. Time still had to fix itself because of the Anti-Monitor's machinations in trying to destroy the universe and bring it back the way he wanted to see it. But the multiverse that existed back then was saved and still exists now. So instead of, you know, the faucet world of Shazam, Captain Marvel, you know, completely going away and having to be integrated into the DC universe, that universe still exists now. So you can get on the cosmic treadmill and find yourself in that parallel universe. It is not gone. So the idea of the 52 is gone, that you don't have these 52 parallel worlds that what's-his-face convoluted put together, Grant Morrison,
right, with
put together.
Yeah.
So somewhere out there in this mix, you've got Barry Allen Flash. You've got
Kara out there. Okay, now it's late.
Yeah, so anyway, I loved the artwork. I loved the story. I loved how they brought the character back, and he still feels like that classic character. I love how they're playing, you know, there's a little bit of a nudge of this idea that you don't know if their son, Jonathan, if he's going to turn into a super boy or if he's going to be a normal boy, you know, because so far he's not shown any powers or anything, but at the same time, it could be like what we saw with Superman not getting his powers till after he hit puberty, you know, around that time period. So, you know, you don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but you have these possibilities and all these interesting things together. And as we see changes in the New 52, you know, he makes a comment at one point, like, I can't believe Cyborg joined the Justice League instead of the Teen Titans, you know, because that's the universe that he knew. And you know, we look back at that and say, yeah, that is kind of weird and crazy. I just love the story. I love the artwork. I love getting those classic characters back. I love the idea of the multiverse. I love the idea that Barry Allen Flash and classic Hal Jordan are still out there somewhere doing their own thing, and they could show up at any time, or you may never see them again. Just, you know, depends on how everything plays out. But for me, it was just that warm cup of cocoa on a cold day type feeling that I got when I was done reading the book that I'm really looking forward to.
Is this one of those not-in-continuity stories?
No, this is...
Oh, this is in continuity. Yeah, that's the point. That's the whole point of my question, which is how does he fit, you know, as kind of a bystander in the regular 52, but this is actually a different reality, correct?
No, this is the normal DC universe.
Okay.
When he came into it, he came in when that giant battle was happening with Darkseid that we saw at the beginning of Justice League number one, which was... Right. The beginning of the New 52. That's when he was pushed into this version of the multiverse after the fight on Crisis on Infinite Earths in 86. So when things kind of played itself out, this is where he ended up. And instead of getting involved, he saw that this world had a Superman, so he said, well, basically now's my chance at living a normal life. You know, now he's married with Lois, she had the baby, now here's their chance to finally just live normal lives as normal people. So they changed their names, they moved into a farmhouse, you know, out in the middle of flyover country, and they're just, you know, they're giving their son a work ethic, and they're fighting, you know, against evil in their own ways. She's doing her investigative reporting just under an anonymous name. He's still keeping an eye on people who he thinks may turn into supervillains. You know, but for the most part, they're just living that quote-unquote normal life and not being the center of attention. So this series is just, you know, opening them up to the fact that there may be these threats coming now that they've been here long enough and have been established long enough over the last 4 years or however long it's been that things may start to come to a head.
Got it.
All right.
So maybe we'll get a proper Superboy whenever he's of age.
Right. Maybe, but maybe not.
Or wait, would he be the one from 3000, or would it still be Clark? I don't. Or what is 3000 continuity? Or what?
I don't know. Tim Reed's 3000. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. What was the question?
Justice League 3000. What's that?
Superman? Yeah. Is this gonna be the one that's gonna grow up into be that?
Oh, no, because all the Justice League members and that are reincarnated from, like, DNA from the original Justice League and put into people in the year 3000 to create the Justice League. So they just have, like, their essence, I guess, like I said, the DNA. But then the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold and Supergirl are from the original New 52, at least it seems.
Right.
Supergirl was frozen in time or frozen somehow. And I forget how Booster Gold and Blue Beetle showed up. And then was the red-haired Lantern?
Guy Gardner.
Guy Gardner is a woman.
Yeah.
Got remade into a woman. And Flash is a woman, too. And actually they're going to turn the whole team into women. They announced it's going to be a team of women.
Are they going to call J-Force?
Oh, no.
And on that note.
All right.
So did we do all the clicks already?
No.
Oh, come on already. I got highlights to watch, people.
Yeah. I'm debating between Sam Wilson, Captain America, and Ms. Marvel 19. Miss Marvel 19.
You know what? I'm gonna go with Sam Wilson. Nice. Both of those are pretty darn good reads. So
yeah,
that works.
Your review of that Batman Superman has me interested to read it now. I mean, I was gonna read it anyway. I got it sent over here, but now that I know it actually like takes place in the actual universe.
You mean Lois and Clark?
Yeah, I played Batman Superman.
I was a little confused.
Oh. Lois and Clark, whatever, two named book.
And on that note, it is evident that it is getting late, so we should try to wrap up.
Yes. All right.
So highlights to watch, people.
Yeah, Dave wants to go bask in his playoff victory.
And let's go, Mets!
The rest of us are just tired. Make sure you go to the website, theclicknation.com. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Dirt is at PCN_dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Please do. Yay.
And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Yeah, he is.
We'll be back next week. More comic book reviews and comic book news and all that goodness. We are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Great! Let's go, man! What's on your